It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacy and Jeff are here. And of course, you know, number one topic, top of mind, net neutrality. We're going to try to figure out a way to explain it to people so they understand it. They understand what the hazards are and we can kind of work towards a solution. It's a good conversation. You'll want to stay tuned. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 432, recorded Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017. Life of Pi. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by Video Blocks from Storyblocks. Get all the high-quality stock video, audio, and images you can imagine for just $149 a year. Go to videoblocks.com/twig today. And buy Blue Bottle Coffee. Get fresh, high-quality, delicious coffee delivered right to your door. Visit bluebottlecoffee.com/twig for $10 off your first subscription order. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, a show where we Googlify anything that happens in our world. Joining us from Thanksgiving Land, Texas, which is right next door to Sugar Land, Texas. Stacy,
3 hours away.
Yeah. Stacy on IoT.com. Stacy's newsletter is at Stacy on IoT.com. Her podcast is on the IoTpodcast.com, right? Am I right?
It's also in Stacy on IoT.
Just go to Stacy on IoT.
Just go there.
Go there. And you have family coming, and you showed us before the show that you have a Gantt chart to organize.
Thanksgiving. Yes, to organize the workflow.
Wow. Jeff Jarvis is also here. What are you doing for tomorrow's feast?
Oh, as little as possible.
Good man. Do you watch football?
You know, my son, poor him, is a Jets fan, and so I started.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's hard. And Jake is. So I start, but now I'm wondering whether I should feel guilty for watching it all. I don't know.
I know. You know, I feel guilty because you're talking about the brain trauma that football.
Yeah.
And we're learning that this is really devastating to everybody. The sad story, Aaron Hernandez, the Patriot who went to jail for murder and then committed suicide in jail. He was, I think, 27 or 28. The doctor who recently did the autopsy on his brain said it was the worst case of what they call it, BCE?
CTE,
he'd ever seen in somebody so young. He said he had the brain of an old man. And so then you start to put that in context that this guy, you know, he wasn't a murderer. He was, his brain had been injured by years of football. Very sad.
Yeah.
So you're right.
Watch football?
I do. I love it. I mean, what are you going to do? But Lisa, who's really the real fan of the family, has the same qualms about it. It's like, should we give it up? I don't know. Do you trust Alexa? Cobra wants to know, Stacy, for your timings.
Oh, yes, actually.
Will this be your
do.
First Thanksgiving with the Echo?
No. I've had the Echo since 2014.
Wow. You're a pioneer.
I bought it the day it came out. I was like, this is awesome.
Isn't that funny how you, I just did the same thing. I mean, we got it immediately and then still there are people go, well, but I don't understand why you would want that. What? You will want this. Trust us.
I am using my June oven and I have a lighting recipe for my family, like for the dinner.
So it's a little late, but we did this Saturday. We're going to do a cooking new screensavers, including the June oven, the Mellow sous vide cooker.
Which
I love, by the way. Another super pricey internet-connected gadget for cooking. And we roasted potatoes in the June oven that came out perfectly. And I can show you the video of the oven roasting.
Do you have a Heston Q?
What's that?
It is a cooking appliance that is a pan. It looks like a pan, and you stick things on it, or it looks like a stovetop.
Oh, it's a smart cooking system.
Yes. So the Heston Q it's a smart fry pan and then a burner plate,
basically.
Oh, it's
basically. Like an inductance plate.
Ooh. Or do you have the Thermomix?
Man, you've got gadgets galore. And what's funny is these are all IoT gadgets. They all have Bluetooth and that's crazy. What's the Thermomix?
Oh, now this came out in Europe years ago, and basically it does everything for you. It's a $1,500 device, but love it.
What? It's so weird. It's what is it? It looks like a blender, but it's heating.
It chops your food. It cooks your food. It's magic. It
eats your food for you.
It does not eat your food, but yeah, it's kind of crazy. I don't know it's like something you would see on late at night on the QVC channel. But
did you get this? Cost?
I didn't get it.
She said $1,400. Oh, you didn't get it.
I've seen it.
Thermomix keeps track of your cooking time and gives you precise and constant temperature.
Well, the accent
Thermomix
sells it.
Will just, stop
I'll buy it
the
now.
Exact time you need. You just have to wait until you hear the sound that will remind you.
I think
you
you'd need a college
ready.
Degree to operate this thing.
Cooking.
So I know a cooking. Lot of cooking. Cooking.
Cooking.
Cooking.
That's what they used to call it. Now they call it cooking. Thermomixing.
I know people use their Vitamix blender to make soup because it does heat up and your soup will get hot from the Vitamix. But this looks like kind of something. Wow. So you don't have this. I'm glad to see
it. I don't have that. No. All right. I'm only so fancy.
I did. I don't want to even go into it. It's ridiculous.
What'd you get now, Leo?
The problem with being a geek and then having other hobbies like photography or cooking is it just ends up being really expensive. And it doesn't make you a better cook or a better photographer. But it's what the photographers call it GAS, gear acquisition syndrome. And I got it. I've got such bad gas.
Okay.
Thanksgiving is tomorrow. That's why we're talking about all this. But today, a little Thanksgiving from Peter Thiel, who sold 73%. Remember, he's featured in the Social Network movie as the first guy to invest in Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg came to him and said, I got this thing. It's at Harvard right now. He gave him $500,000, a small investment that made him a very, very wealthy man.
$1 billion, right?
Yeah, a billion. He sold 160,000 shares for $29 million. He still has $11 million worth of shares left as of this morning. So Facebook's up a lot, 58% this year, which makes Mark Zuckerberg $25 billion richer. He's now worth $75 billion. Thiel is a mere $3 billionaire, $3.2 billion. But Thiel's also off the board at Y Combinator, right? Or he was an advisor at Y Combinator. He's off the board there. And,
yeah,
and he's
no
now off the board?
There.
Is he off the board at Facebook?
Well, it doesn't say that he's off the board. I just tried to look it up. No, but I would have to imagine at some point.
That's a pretty big, he still has some.
God help us, he's getting ready to run for Senate or something.
Or, maybe he's,
He might.
Maybe he just
That's fine.
Wants to take a break and enjoy life, right?
I don't think this is a guy who enjoys life.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't envision him doing that.
No. I always wonder, this is why I'll never be a billionaire. Because, you give me $5, I go, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. Okay, I'm off.
Time for my Enchirito.
Yeah, Enchirito time. I'll never, that's the problem. I give up too easily.
I don't think that's really a problem. Only in America, in our ethos, is that a problem.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, neither of you bought the Pixel Buds yet, right?
Oh, I sent my back.
I just canceled them. Oh, I canceled them.
I have to turn. Yeah. I have to return mine. Mine stopped working. Why'd you send yours back, Stacey?
Because they were the most uncomfortable
things
ever. God, it felt like spiders clawing at my ears.
And, sound quality was good, although Sam Mashkovich had a pretty good piece in Ars Technica in which he said it, and he has a broader musical taste, I guess, than I do, but he listens to older music. It doesn't sound as good. It's tuned for modern pop music. I didn't know, but there's a lot of sound shaping going on in the Pixel Buds. But I thought they sounded very good, the music I was listening to. I kind of like the idea of it being in your ear, but then it just basically, they stopped working and I can't repair them. I can't pair them to anything. They just, so now I have to call them and get a
new
one? Did
you unpair them or?
Well, yeah, because it wasn't.
You have to unpair them first.
It wasn't working, so I forgot them on my Pixel phone. And then I never could repair them. So the whole thing is, I mean, it's and they've had such trouble with the Pixel phone. I mean, I think it's okay now. They put out an update that let me saturate the color more, and there's no burn-in on mine. But still, what's going on, Google?
Can we talk about that momentarily? Because I have my own issue, which is
you have the smaller.
You
Pixel.
Have the little one.
I have the smaller. I have the little Pixel. The Pixel Mini.
The Wii Pixel.
The Wii Pixel. So I called them because, you know, I was kind of sick of having my NFC radio turned off. So I was like, hey, my phone is clicking. Is there something you guys could do? And they're like, well, we have an update that addresses that.
But it's not out yet.
Okay. So he tells me it's out. We've started pushing it. And I was like, great. Could you like push it down to me super fast? You know,
now?
Now? Yes. Because I didn't have it. And he's like, well, it'll be out to you in a few weeks. And I was like, geez. I am not on a carrier. They are not Apple having to stagger their release times. You know, like, it's not like he's got 50 million of these out in the wild.
You're on Google Fi?
No, I'm on Verizon, but it's an unlocked phone. So my carrier doesn't
push anything.
Right.
Right.
So what this tells me is Google can't do an update, an over-the-air update.
This tells me is Google can't do hardware.
God, yeah, it does. So
it's very disappointing. I mean, here they are. They're really kind of making a push to compete with Apple. And in some respects, they do. The camera's great, right, Stacey? You love your camera?
The camera's, yeah, it's great.
But in other respects, they just, I mean, this is not as good a screen and as either the Samsung Notes or S8s or the Apple iPhone X. It's just not a very good screen. And then it's got buzzing and clicking on the Pixel 2. It's got a burn-in issue on the XL. And the Pixel Buds, why did you return yours, Jeff? You didn't return them. You just canceled them.
Well, I just canceled them just today. I remember the show coming up. Oh, better cancel them before it's too late. I just read the reviews too often. The pairing is what killed it for me.
Yeah, well,
I want to be able to operate among three devices seamlessly, and you've got to unpair and repair, and you got to put them back in the case to do so. Oh, forget it.
Plus, the translation is dopey. It works much better just using it, as always, on the phone. Because the real problem is the translation that's being made is you hear it, but the person who talked to you in the other language doesn't hear it, so can't correct it. And since it does make mistakes, it's really better to do it on the phone where both sides can hear the translation and say, no, that's a mistake. What I meant to say was, you need to be able to do that.
Like it's a gimmicky thing because they said, okay, we can put an assistant on the buds. Oh, what can we do with it? Oh,
it's gimmicky.
I don't know, translate.
Yeah, it's gimmicky.
Yeah, we'll translate.
Yeah. So, actually, I think one of our chatters has it right, which is, where is it? I want to give you a quote. Basically, Google's not a hardware manufacturer.
Well, Leo, it's what
an
you
information
just said.
Company.
It's an information company. That's the quote.
Or what you just said, Google is in fact like Apple in the sense that it's no longer wowing us.
Well, didn't they?
Yeah, but Apple has wowed us with the iPhone X. Apple is not 100% consistent, but they know how to manufacture. And the AirPods do exactly what the Pixel Buds don't. And if it would behoove you, if you take the headphone jack out of a phone to provide a good wireless alternative, or you've really just screwed your users.
And if you want wired ones, there are very few good USB-C wired headphones.
Right. Oh, are there any?
There are like five.
And they give you an adapter so you could use any headphones.
Oh, my adapter stopped working, so I'm getting a new dongle. I'm getting a new dongle. How awful.
And how quickly are you going to lose the adapter? It's just...
Well,
or do you have to buy five of them? Or
But yeah, it is really frustrating to take something out that worked.
Reason the size of this phone. Why can't... I'm sorry, Stacey.
No, I was going to say, and it's my fault for buying, you know, the Pixel phone, but I really like being on stock Android. And Google, my God, I'm your most loyal customer here. I mean, these are the people who are like, we love you, Google. We love Android. why must you screw us over?
We had the marketing director from OnePlus on All About Android last night. Yesterday, the OnePlus 5T came out. And this might be the phone. You know, I'm not going to get it because I already have a Pixel. The camera isn't as good as the Pixel. Why can't I click this? Are they not? Maybe they're not selling it anymore. But this is kind of everything the Pixel 2 XL should have been, including a headphone jack, and isn't.
Ooh, maybe I should buy that. Maybe I should send my handset back.
Yeah. Well, this is the big though. It's not. It's more Pixel 2 XL. It does have dual lenses. I think Google has done one thing Google should really get credit for. They have proven that they can do with a single lens many of the same things that dual lens cameras do. And I think it's actually a better camera than the iPhone.
A single lens and lots of processing power.
Yeah. Computational skill. Yeah. But the OnePlus 5T is Oxygen OS, which is a really pretty pure Android experience. I kind of regret now that I, and by the way, $550 instead of $800 or $900.
What's that song? Regrets. I've had a few.
$500 for 6 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs storage. But they actually make an 8 gig of RAM version and 128 gig storage for $60 more, $559. Yeah, the charging's really fast. It charges from 0 to 100 in an hour.
Wow.
Jason Howell has it. I played it a little bit. I came very close to ordering it, and I thought, well, I can't really justify it. I just bought this $1,000 Google phone.
Yeah. You could send it back.
Yeah, I'm going to send the Pixel Buds back or get them fixed. They didn't. You're right, because it's one size fits all. If you don't like how it fits, you're not going to like it. It's kind of on top of the ear. You've got this big round thing.
Yeah.
And my ears are really tiny.
Yeah.
My wife has the same problem. She tried them. She said, I can't use them. They're too big. She can barely use the AirPods. I'm sorry, Jeff, what?
No, I was just saying the same thing. If they don't stick in the ear, they're going to fall out. Yeah, I hate that feeling, and it's not going to work.
Again, like a spider, just perch there.
I'll tell you, I'm more disappointed than anything. I really want there to be a good competitive environment. You know, HTC's gone by the wayside. I think Sony, unfortunately, although they make kind of nice hardware, it's uninspiring, and I don't really see the big future for them. LG, maybe. OnePlus maybe, but really the king of Android has to have a reference design that is kind of top flight, and it's not, and it's very disappointing. We need the competition.
Although if anyone wants to share some nice wireless headphones that will not break the bank, feel free to share them.
The AirPods the best right now, but it's not cheap. It's $160 or $150. Yeah. It's definitely the best that's out there.
But I can't use my AirPods with this, can I?
Yeah. Any Bluetooth.
I can?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
They're just Bluetooth headphones. You know, you get more features if you use it with an iPhone, just as you get more features if you use the Pixel Buds with a Pixel 2. But it's
They also fall out of, feel like they're falling out of the ear?
A little bit.
Yeah, I can't do that.
They go farther in the ear, but see, the one thing I did like about the Pixel Buds, they had that wire, so if they fall out, they're kind of there.
I like the AirPods,
they're just loose. Yeah, I don't mind the wire. The AirPods are just flying free. Fly free, little AirPods.
I got my Mini today.
Oh.
Oh, I got mine too. But I got it a while back.
I haven't got my coupon yet.
Oh.
You're kidding me.
They said within a month.
Are you sure it didn't go into updates or something?
Yeah, let me go to my Gmail. Maybe it went somewhere I wasn't looking.
I was really impressed with, I put it downstairs, and I'm really impressed so far with Google's calendar efforts. Although, I find it hard to ooh, it'd be so cool if I could just tell it to put something on my calendar. But it's really actually kind of hard to think through the process to say all the right words to put something on your calendar. So that was a challenge.
That's
the
problem all along, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm like,
syntax.
Set an appointment for accounting at 4 p.m. on November 4th. And it got it when I said it a different way too. Although it didn't recognize accounting, it said counting, but that's fine.
It's close enough.
And it now has, it personalizes, so it can put my voice on my calendar and Andrew's voice on his calendar.
So I think this is specifically for Google Home. They've added these features. You go to the Google Assistant settings, scroll down to services. There's a Google Calendar icon there. So you just kind of expand that menu out, and You could choose a default calendar. Okay. Availability. Okay. So there's more stuff. So, you're saying it's doing a good job. It's so hard because I'm, you know, like you, I'm all in on the Echo. I don't know if I want two assistants in every room.
But the price is right.
These minis are $30, I think, with the Black Friday deal.
If you had neither now, both of you, neither, which would you buy?
Google Home. Actually, we did our gift guide this morning, and Google Home was our gift guide item. Or the Sonos One if you want two speakers in one. So I would not do the Echo.
That's a big deal. That's interesting, Stacey.
Yeah, because I have been all in on the Echo forever, but Google is smarter, and now it has almost every... It doesn't have the June oven skill where I tell it to preheat my oven, which is
well,
nice.
Well, that's it.
Echo does that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, have you not enabled the June oven skill?
No.
Oh, Leo, what are you doing with your time? You could be telling Madam A to preheat the oven.
That's a big problem in general with all of these is what I call discovery, the ability to figure out what the hell they can do and then turn it on and then remember it.
Well, that's true. Yes. Andrew was actually mad at me when I was doing it because he's like, you didn't tell me we could do that. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
You didn't tell me either, by the way.
I'm so sorry.
I bought that June oven because of you.
Now you know.
You.
That was also on our gift guide.
It was expensive, but we use it all the time. Lens is now rolling out to Google Assistant.
I have it.
Oh, so you take a picture of something and it tells you what it is.
Yeah, so I'll
should I do that? Here. Let's find something and take some pictures of it.
So I'm going to take a picture of this item. And it's going to tell me, let's see.
Oh, you took a picture of the Google Home.
I found Home.
If it didn't know that.
I found this Google Home.
So what all can you do with this lens?
Just point it at things and click on them, and it'll tell you what it finds about them. It's a search query.
It's not just buying it. It's not just products.
No. It's anything.
I like the squeeze part of the assistant. So how do I get her to look at it?
I'm forgetting that. There's a on the bottom right, go to assistant on the bottom right. There's an icon. Click on that. It opens the camera. After
I don't have
ask
the
you.
Camera yet. That's the problem.
Well, what does it look like? What does it look like?
It looks like your normal assistant with a keyboard on the left and a microphone.
No, show it to me close up.
Where's the camera part?
Oh, you're right. Poor Leo.
That's what I have too.
Yeah. So now I have seen in photos. So if you take, you can do that. If you take a photo, you can then post hoc, or is it propter hoc? Post hoc, you can take a picture. Here, bring me a... Oh, yeah, let's see if it knows a TIE fighter. So I'll do a close-up of a TIE fighter. There we go. That's a Star Wars thing for you people. And then, is that the lens icon? I can't remember what the... Yeah. It says, I'm not seeing this clearly. Is that the logo you're talking about, Jeff, with the...
Yes.
It's kind exactly. of a square, yep. incomplete square with two blue dots in it.
A little kind of Instagram with a gap.
Yeah. I'm not seeing this clearly. What can Google Lens do? And then you can search the image on Google, which, of course, will immediately find you. Oh, it thinks it's origami.
Oh, well, it's okay.
It's not wrong. Maybe if I take a picture of the front. The problem is I do this stuff and then I go, why is there all this crap in my Google Photos? What are these pictures of weird things?
Oh, you know, I have pictures of strange men because I'm always taking pictures of founders and people. And my daughter like scans through my photos and is like, Mom,
this is pretty.
Who are these guys?
So it's kind of cool. So it acts like it's looking dot for dot, right? So it has all these dots moving around, which is just obviously a bogus animation. It thinks it's model aircraft. That's close.
So, Leo, bring me something else and take a picture of the logo behind you.
Oh, you think it'll know Twit?
Yeah, I think
it
will.
Wow, that would be impressive. I would be very happy if it knew that. All right, I took a picture. Now you go into the photos. You press this button. Watch the animation. It's so cool. Not seeing this clearly.
Oh, no.
It thinks it looks like a Stargate.
You just did the logo, maybe.
Oh, no, I'm not going to. Okay, all right, we're going to do, this is so boring.
How about your lunch?
Yeah, I'll do my salad. No, here's, see if it knows Batman. But it's not your everyday
Batman.
That's
not fair, yeah, that's not going to.
It's kind of a funky Batman. Batman, fictional superhero. It knew. Character created by Bob Kane and writer Bill Finger. Pulled up the Wikipedia result. That was pretty good. Oh, I know. I got one I know it'll get. Let's get this. It might be the angle is fooling it. And does it work better if there's nothing else in the image, or is it pretty good at figuring out?
No, I figured it out.
It doesn't know an Android.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I'm screenshotting that.
You know what's harder for it is in the photo version. You're actually you click on the you point at the thing itself.
Oh, that would make more sense.
Which makes more sense, yeah. Because it's too big a photo.
It's too much. It's too much for its little brain to figure out. All right, there we go. We waste another 10 minutes doing stupid stuff.
We can talk about things.
Time wasters.
Say again.
We could talk about things like.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm looking at stories. I got to be honest, guys. I have been like not paying attention to the news today. So,
well, we got the big one in Peter Thiel. Well, FCC has decided that you don't need net neutrality. Well, let's take a break.
That's a fairly big story.
We're gonna spend some time with that. Very irritating. Very irritating.
You know, Leo. I never say I told you so to you, except for one case, which was the Chromebook. The other one is you said give Ajit Pai a chance.
What a fool I was. Well,
yes, you were.
Everybody deserves a chance.
Well, he's used it.
He's not getting another one.
No.
Let's take a break. We'll talk about what the FCC plans to do, what's going on, what you can do about it, what it all means. Jeff Jarvis, Stacey Higginbotham, This Week in Google. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If you're out there looking for a new house, or maybe you like your house, but you want to get a little money out of it and refi, maybe get a lower interest rate or lower your payments, you ought to know about Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. One of the biggest, I think second biggest, only that big bank that you really don't want to do business with for many reasons. Quicken Loans is awesome. They're very cool, very high tech. Number one in customer satisfaction for mortgage approval and mortgage servicing year after year after year with J.D. Power. People love Quicken Loans. And I love them. They want a little bit more of my heart when they created Rocket Mortgage. It's a completely online mortgage approval process. So that means you don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to get up. You can do it on your phone. You can do it from the couch. You could do it in an open house. Yes, an open house, because you don't have to go get paperwork. You don't have to find your bank statements or your pay stubs. You don't have to go up to the attic to get tax returns. Everything they need is online. All you have to do is say, here's my basic information. They'll say, you give us permission to you know, whatever it is they do, their magic with their trusted financial partners. They get the information, and then based on your income, assets, and credits, they crunch the numbers, and they can analyze all the home loan options, and then they'll say, okay, what's your down payment? What's your term? What's your rate? What would you like? And they'll find one that fits your needs. And all of this happens in seconds. You can be approved. You could be at an open house, be going out the door, say, wait a minute, let's buy this. And then before you leave, show the realtor, we're approved. Rocket Mortgage, I love this, is aptly named by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully every step of the way, and mortgage confidently. It's easy to find. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. And do use that last part because that gives us credit. rocketmortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states at MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Quicken Loans brings you Rocket Mortgage, and we thank them for their support of This Week in Google.
Thank you, Quicken.
Thank you, Quicken. So we knew it was coming. Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, the new Republican FCC. There's, I think, 3 out of the 5 commissioners are now Republican. That's what happens every new president. They switch parties. They have to, though, nominate equally from both parties, and then the chairman can be whoever, in this case, a Republican. Former Verizon lawyer, Ajit Pai. Former FCC commissioner, announced his new net neutrality plan. And December 14th, they'll vote on it. It will ascend. He says, I don't want to micromanage the internet. I think that we don't need to regulate this. These companies will do a fine job of, making the internet free. He says net neutrality rules are heavy-handed. They are stifling the internet. And come December 14th, there will be no rules. There will be no rules. These are the Obama-era regulations. We've certainly been in a world without these regulations. In fact, it's only recently that the Title III regulations were put into place by his predecessor, Tom Wheeler.
Title II.
Title III is another one. Title II, thank you. Ajit Pai says, President Clinton got it right. Wow. You never thought I'd hear that. In 1996, when he established a free market-based approach to this new thing called the Internet and the Internet economy we have as a result of this light-touch regulatory vision. Well, that sounds right. What's wrong with that? We saw companies like Facebook and Amazon and Google become global powerhouses with no net neutrality regulations precisely because we had light-touch rules that apply to this Internet. The Internet wasn't broken in 2015 when these heavy-handed regulations were adopted. So maybe we're over-exaggerating the negative potential negative consequences of this.
Give Ajit Pai a chance. Yeah, I've heard that up before.
The other thing they're doing that's very infuriating is they're also saying, by the way, states, don't bother making regulations on your own. We'll handle this.
And I thought these people believed in states' rights. Yeah.
No, only
as someone who lives in Austin, Texas, I can tell you that is most assuredly not the case since our legislators stripped us of all of our municipal rules, including being able to handle plastic bags and the size of trees that could be cut. Thank you. I have lots of opinions.
The size of trees?
Austin won't let you trim tree issue. Or cut down trees of a certain size because we want to preserve the big trees, right?
Apparently,
this really upset Governor Abbott, when he was Attorney General, lived in Austin and ran into the city and had an issue over his tree. So this year, he was like, that was one of his examples. That sanctuary cities and our plastic bag ban all really hacked him off. So
the chairman's proposal, which he calls Restoring Internet Freedom Order, would mark a shift in authority and emphasis. Instead of the FCC regulating how ISPs operate, the Federal Trade Commission would handle enforcement of net neutrality violations. Some have said that's not going to work very well. They're overburdened as it is. Pai said the FCC will still require transparency. Any business practice that would affect the offering of a service has to be disclosed to the consumers. The ISPs have to create a publicly available web page where it's all spelled out and entrepreneurs can understand exactly how these businesses are operated. The FTC had long had authority prior to 2015, and the result was pretty clear. They took targeted action against the bad apples, let everyone else thrive in a free market. I think consumers and companies are better off as a result. That's pretty compelling.
Okay.
So
there's...
Go ahead, Stacey.
I'm like, Jeff, I'm going after it because this is something I know a lot about.
Do it. Go for it.
All the way back to Jenikowski, so way, way back in 2008 timeframe, as the internet got bigger, there was always a question about the FCC. Did it even need to exist in the internet era? So part of this isn't just, hey, let's tackle net neutrality. Part of this is let's take as much away from the FCC as possible. I think there is actually a valuable debate to be had over, do we need a particular regulatory agency? Has it outlived its time? Blah, blah, blah. Like we still have railroad commissioners. They have a function, but, you know, so that's one thing. So part of this is just disempowering the FCC. But, and then we get into these rules. Doing anything on a case-by-case basis at the government level is almost always harmful to consumers. If you think back to one of the big cases that launched this, it was Comcast actually blocking BitTorrent traffic. And the case was all the way back, I think it started in 2007. It took over 17 months to get Comcast to change its policies to not block BitTorrent. And so if there is harm, It is possible the government will intervene absent actual rules, but it's also a process that will take a long time. In 17 months in the life of like a startup or an app that people want to try to use and can't, that will kill them. Done. So that's one. And I'll stop talking and let Jeff talk some too.
No, I was just going to point to a link I put up.
Let me, just before you do that, I just want to back up Stacey's first point, which is really an interesting point that I hadn't thought about, that the FCC, this is all really about eliminating the FCC, because a week ago, they also relaxed their media ownership rules so that it used to be you couldn't own more than two of the top four radio stations in the city. You couldn't have a newspaper and radio stations. That all of that's gone. So media ownership regulations. And that's really good for companies like Sinclair, about to buy the Tribune Corporation. It is adds to the consolidation of media voices in this country. And I think that's a terrible thing. But it is exactly the same idea, which is we don't need to regulate this stuff.
And here's the... So I wrote a tweet 2 days ago, I think. It's actually like the most popular tweet I've ever done. And it's talking about all the things that the FCC is currently doing. Another item that it's doing is it's saying that... Because it used to regulate copper wires, there's been a long-running process to eliminate copper. And the FCC was like, hey, it's cool if you want to not have your copper network, but you got to have something equivalent there. So you can't just rip out your copper and offer something crappy like satellite or mobile broadband that's super expensive. What they're doing now is they're saying, hey, you know what? Don't worry about that equivalency. Wireless is fine. That's good. So that is another sphere of influence where the FCC will no longer play.
Yeah, for a long time, when Verizon put in Fios, it would cut the copper illegally.
Yeah.
And the homeowner was responsible for saying, no, I want my copper lines so that I can leave. If I want, I can go to a competitor. Once they cut the copper, bye-bye, you have to use Verizon Fios. So that's an example of why you want to preserve some of this stuff. Ajit Pai says with these new media ownership rules, the FCC is dragging the broadcast rules into the digital age. So we don't, you know, maybe we are in a new era where we don't need an old-fashioned commission like the FCC voice things like equal time.
If we had competitive landscape, I might agree, but we do not.
Right. At its core, this is still an anti-competitive area.
Yeah.
And yes. I think people, like, there is a false argument out there, and I yelled at my former colleague Adam Leshinsky about it this morning, which is that Google, Netflix, the original protectors of net neutrality from back in 2008, they have all the power now, and they don't need protection from the big guys. And that's not... That is true. These guys do have the power. And actually, about a year ago, a lot of them weren't even worried about net neutrality. They were kind of like shrugging it off.
Yeah, Google's gone back and forth, you know, on this.
Yeah.
Because Twit needs protection.
Well, that's the point. And not even Twit. Although, admittedly, I would like to make sure that we don't get discriminated against. YouTube's going to be fine. They can afford it. Netflix is going to be fine. They can afford it. I can't afford to go through a toll road to get to our audience. And it's not even me. What about a new person, an innovator who wants to create the next Netflix or the next Google? They're going to face all kinds of roadblocks. Truthfully, I think Facebook and Google love this. This is what they secretly in their heart of hearts want. It protects them.
No, I think they have more principles than that. A, B, the things that are going to make them grow, they see are the things that are going to start, they can buy. And if things can't start, they are threatened with stagnation.
Yeah, Netflix loves it. Link. Netflix even Netflix said, didn't he? Didn't even say we don't need net neutrality. We got this
because they can afford it. But in fact, it's unfair.
But what's the next Netflix going to do?
Right.
So look at the link I put up in Portugal. Is life
that's
without
that? No, is I'm sorry. Is yeah, it yeah.
BS.
That's a. Okay, that's I've that's seen that link ask. All over Twitter. We got to be really careful to.
That's what I was going to ask the question. I was going to ask because I can't. It was a Google Translate, and it looks like it's just for all these reasons. Just give us $4.99.
Yeah, and not a lot of people are using this as an example of what it will look like that you'll have to pay. But what it really is, it's a telecom. It's a cell carrier in Google in Portugal, and we talked about this on Security Now. and somebody from Portugal explained, this is you're paying to be zero rated on these services.
Right.
And it isn't even unlimited zero rating. You're paying to say, I'm going to get 2 extra gigabytes. This will pay for right. 2 more gigabytes on
Well, but Netflix. Wait. Why is it BS if they're separating out the...
They have it like, for they have a music... Services, it looks like they have a music package.
Are included.
Yeah, but
right.
you're...
So certain services are included there. And if you want to do Leo's musical hits from the 70s, you're not there. You're effed.
So this That's is zero rating, which is a net neutrality issue.
It's not exactly zero rating, though, because you're paying for it.
Paying for it.
And for it's a limited amount. Package. You're basically, right. basically, they're selling you a basket of additional bandwidth that covers these services. Now, I agree, it's not neutral in the sense that it doesn't cover all music services.
Right. Well, wireless is different. It's fundamentally different than wireline. So that's something to think about
Google's
from a technological
always argued that.
Standpoint.
Yeah, there's the picture.
I've been angry with Google for that, but go ahead, yes.
Well, there's a reason why. Wireline is almost unlimited in the sense of how the packets get to you. When you talk about wireless, though, there's a limit to how many bits you can cram into a hertz of spectrum. And that is physics. So it does cost more. And you can't send out as much data over wireless as you can over like a fiber connection, right? So that's a fundamental issue. Now, are we reaching those limits on a consistent and regular basis? That I kind of doubt.
There's a really simple way to do this, which is simply say, here's our price per bit on landlines. Here's our price per bit on wireless. It's going to cost more on wireless because it's more expensive for us. That's that. We don't care about here's what it costs per bit. And then to me, that solves it, right? And if you I want more bits, I'll pay for it. If I want more speed, I'll pay for it. And I think that solves it. But the problem is discriminating against individual bits and saying that bit's not the same as that bit.
Okay, so you can't measure just the bits. You've also got to think about how many people are asking for certain bits at a certain time because congestion is real on wireless networks.
Yeah, but paying for the bits solves that as well because
you would have to do it like a toll. That would be congestion pricing. You would have to do it on a toll kind of basis. So like at certain times. And the challenge is, I am very, I guess, libertarian from an economic standpoint. I don't necessarily think that an ISP should say, okay, it cost me 5 cents to deliver this bit. And consider, you know, many of them have unionized workforces. You've got to consider the costs that go into it from an infrastructure and ongoing maintenance. You know, so once you account for all of that, it costs 5 cents. Okay, that's incredibly expensive, but let's say 5 cents per
100 megabytes or something. Then it's not so crazy.
It costs this much.
Yeah.
And then I think that they can charge whatever the heck they want, as long as someone else can come in, build that same infrastructure and charge less. And that right now is where our policies were trying to head, didn't quite make it. And so now we have this stupid area where we've got only a few companies that actually have the literal capacity to offer broadband services. And they can, and that's why we're trying to regulate what they can and can't do, because they're the only source for this fundamental good infrastructure.
And what you're really regulating, it's the opposite of regulating, isn't it, Stacey? Aren't you saying that this is the internet, here's what you can't mess up? Isn't it kind of a negative?
Sure. I mean, this is the internet. You can't charge exorbitant rates because we don't have a competitive market. Basically, mm-hmm. like normally if we'd have a competitive market here, like let's say we put conduit in. Let's say everybody who put in fiber had to either share it or just put in conduit. Then we wouldn't have this problem. We would have other people coming in to offer these services.
Like BT,
although BT has gotten in trouble in the past for the way it's tried to price people. I mean, Amsterdam mm-hmm. is probably the best and most famous example, but Amsterdam's a city. Amsterdam has dark fiber, and anyone can run a service over it. Anyone. Amsterdam also says that broadband is a basic right.
That's a model I really like. And many people have talked about this, that the municipalities, the localities should own the infrastructure and then rent it out to ISPs to ride on top of it. And then you'd have more competition.
But we failed at that.
More like a utility.
Yeah, but when we did the Telecommunications Act back in 1996, we decided our competition was cable versus copper, and the companies that own it will always own it. And you can't take that back. I mean, these companies have made a legitimate investment. So it becomes this weird game of, like, if they behave badly, how do we stop them? And that's what the net neutrality rules were for, because the operators were behaving badly.
You can't actually... You could take it back with eminent domain, and you could all, in many cases, for instance, the cable company in most towns, and ours certainly, operates as a monopoly franchised by the city. The city council said, yeah, Comcast, you're our incumbent. And if Comcast loses that contract, they don't come take all their cable out of the ground. They just go, goodbye.
Well, they don't?
No.
They don't get any payoff?
Well, I'm not sure how those contracts work.
Has that ever happened?
That's a really interesting question. I was actually serving on the technology committee for the city of Petaluma where we debated this, but I just think politically it's very difficult because, in effect, you're telling your constituents, yeah, we're not going to have cable for a while. Comcast is not going to be your cable company. Suddenly it's Cox.
Who's going to come invest in your town and install things?
Right. Well, I mean, you can make the case that they have made back their investment in the infrastructure. I mean,
they'll make the case that they're always in the red.
But that's clearly not the case.
It's a far future payback.
But see, I do think that, I guess what I'm saying is, I think there are, it's not completely without merit to say, well, there might be a way to make this work without government regulation. I think government regulation is tricky of the internet. That's tricky.
It is.
And others have pointed out we're not regulating the internet. We're regulating the companies that provide the internet. But
yes.
I don't know if that's a distinction with a difference with a distinction or a distinction with a difference. But
no, there's no, I think it's actually a really important distinction.
Yeah, I have no problem regulating Comcast. That's not a problem. They are regulated. They should continue to be regulated. They're regulated in other ways as well.
So, Stacey, is that the better way to say what I asked you a minute ago? That the internet is unregulated, ergo you who come along and screw it up, we regulate you. I'm trying to come up with a prop.
I feel like the internet should be treated like infrastructure.
Yes.
So like roads, like
water
power,
and
so
power.
Like utilities.
Yeah, they're utilities.
So you should have regulations. Not the services upon it.
So Google's not a utility, but the wires are.
Right. Now, if we want to talk about regulation, though, so there is, I think we should be having a conversation. It sounds like we might be getting it about the power that has accrued to companies like Google and Facebook by virtue of their massive data stores. I think that's an interesting debate that people are going to start having, but that is totally separate from net neutrality. And people who equate, well, Google and all have all this power, you know, I'm like, yeah, sure, fine. Let's talk about regulating them if you want. But that doesn't, it's a false equivalency in the net neutrality debate. Google may not need to take advantage of it.
I'm going to give you guys an assignment. There's a couple of things I think we need. First of all, I think we need a way to describe this to normal people and in general that acknowledges that there are two sides to this. That explains it clearly. That's, by the way, the biggest problem right now is the American public has no idea what net neutrality means or why it would impact them. And in a way that's persuasive for, I think, what we all agree, which is that the internet needs to be free and open, and all bits are created equal. But how do we express that in a way that people will get and support?
Leo, I have written probably 50,000 words on this topic, and I still don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
So
I was thinking about this.
It's a challenge.
Here, how about this? The FCC just turned the internet into your cable company. Everybody hates their cable company. Yeah. And the structure basically is the same. The cable company gets all the power. They decide what you get. They bundle things at their own will. They decide what you can and can't do.
They overprice charge you for it. The FCC just turned the entire internet into your cable.
Well, the cable companies are kind of getting screwed though now by like rebroadcasting rights and some of the content companies, which is meaning their power is dissipating somewhat.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. All I'm trying to say is, I think Leo was asking for what tugs at your emotional heartstrings.
How about
we all hate our cable company?
Let me.
Oh, that's
yes,
true.
That's true. But I also think it's not. I mean, we've seen those pictures of if the internet were run by the cable company,
yeah,
you would
right.
buy. You know, you'd buy the premium package, which would include YouTube and Skype. And if you didn't want to pay that much, you'd get the medium package, which would include, I don't know, Vimeo and Tango. And, you know, and that's, I honestly don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be as obvious and as awful as that. I really think it's going to be more subtle. Things like bandwidth shaping or blocking BitTorrent. I don't think they're going to come out and say, okay, if you want access to YouTube, that's a buck more a month. I can't imagine that actually happening. If it does, then then people are going to be up in arms.
Back in the day, they would have been free to block Skype.
That would have happened. That'll happen in like 10 years or maybe 5 years even. We will go from, I can't believe they're doing that. Now, remember, I mean, what'll happen slowly is there will be bandwidth shaping and maybe there will be some form of zero rating. It's kind of like what the airlines have done with like charging people for basic economy. So what you'll end up with is a more fee-based internet.
Yeah, if you had asked me 10 years ago, you think an airline would ever charge you for carry-on? I'd have laughed at you.
So I think you might be in that same position today with this.
Slope.
I think it'll
in the
carriers and ISPs, bless their hearts, they will go rush down that slope faster than you can imagine because they can. And because these are companies that are not innovative, that are designed around eking the most profits that they can out of this massive infrastructure investment. And that is a mindset. And it's not an incorrect mindset. It's from an era a long time ago. So if you think about it like that, then you understand where they're coming from. And I think that's respectful of both sides. I mean, it's just a mindset that feels utterly foreign in this era.
Here's an analogy I got from Reddit that I thought was not too bad. A Redditor asked to explain why net neutrality is important, said, well, imagine that you have a library in town and you pay for a library card, $20 a year, whether you use it or not. And so you go to the library. The librarian is very helpful. But then when you go to check out some books, she says, well, those books are going to cost more. Like that book I wrote, so I'm going to give you that for free. This book I agree with, so I'm going to give you that for cheap. These books I don't want you reading, I'm not going to give them to you. And the rest I'm going to charge you $20 for. So you say, well, that's no problem. I'll just go to the other library in town. Oh, wait, there isn't one. Is that kind of a good analogy? Is it like that? And will that happen? Will a cable company tier the internet?
I think they've tried to tier the internet. Remember when Time Warner Cable wanted to tier the internet back in like 2008? Oh, that was good times. Good times.
Somebody said, just wait until you really want to see people scream bloody murder. Wait until Comcast says, well, you can't get any free porn, but you're more than welcome to subscribe to Cinemax.
Yeah.
just wait till that happens.
I think the better case will be it's things that you don't recognize as brands. We'll cut off BitTorrent. We'll cut off a phone call, Skype. We'll cut off some new protocol that's hungry. We'll disadvantage it. We'll sell you a service that guarantees the value. It's like also going to hotels. We're going to give you a purposely crappy service for our advertised free Wi-Fi in your room, but then we're going to charge you a ridiculous amount of money.
That's a good example. It will be like hotel Wi-Fi.
Which lie about it being Wi-Fi, about it being high speed, and then rips you off in trying to charge you to get to minimal standards of acceptability. And then fails at that, as I prove on every trip in which I try to be on this show.
I think it's going to be really hard to convince people. Part of the problem is you'll never know what you're not getting. You'll never know about the innovative startups happen. Because they won't happen.
From an IoT perspective, I always think, and there's some interesting, probably too much nuance here, but from an IoT perspective, I tell people, oh, hey, you know, Comcast has a security offering. Maybe they just will say, eh, you're Nest Cam. Let's deprioritize those packets.
Yeah.
And then you may or may not know, but, you know.
It happened with Netflix. Remember Comcast?
So that was peering. And I don't know if we want to talk about peering because that is a different layer of the internet. But I am happy to dive into it because I broke that story.
Here's why it's germane. It's an example of how Comcast could disadvantage a company by just not buying more interconnects, right? Just, man, we're not going to buy more interconnects until you give us some money. So that, I mean, I think that's
another way to disadvantage, yes.
Yeah, I think that that's relevant to the conversation.
That's at the utility layer.
Right.
Which is what we should have be open and competitive.
Right. You get the internet you deserve. And I think that I can't. Well, for one thing, the FCC has shown that it's completely willing to disregard any public comment, even lie about
it. That's another issue.
Yeah.
So this is a totally different issue. And it is very upsetting what is happening with public access to information, to meetings, and the willingness to listen to comments. So the FCC is one. Austin just got sued again for Public Information Act violations. I'm feeling like the entire world is just, oh, guys, okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. It's funny. Yesterday, I was feeling kind of similar. I was feeling, the worst thing you can do is despair ever. But I was perilously
close.
It's kind of hard sometimes when you just, one after another, these, you know, things happen and you just... How could it get any worse? Oh, it did.
Well, my wife is taking to watching tennis reruns now.
Parks and Recreation reruns.
Yeah.
That's I want to have faith in the government.
Jake said last night he was going upstairs when he got home for Thanksgiving, he said, I'm going to go watch Fiction.
Well, so.
Now I'm despairing again.
No, let's not despair. Let us contemplate. But what happens is bad behavior at the highest levels engenders bad behavior.
Yes.
Lower down.
That's right.
And what is...
Yes.
People don't understand how tenuous a nation of laws is, how tenuous a republic is. It is easy to corrupt it from the top down. Very easy. It happens quickly. We've seen it happen in Turkey. We've seen it happen in Greece. It is very easy. I've seen it happen in Egypt. As soon as there is a lack of respect, as soon as there's a sense it's not fair... As soon as you don't feel like it's we have the rule of law, it crumbles instantly. I'm reading right now, rereading The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, which is, of course, the classic William L. Shirer book about the rise and fall of Hitler. And I'm in the point where he is coming to power, and it's terrifyingly familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and everybody thought he was a buffoon, by the way. The Americans thought, oh, no, you don't have to worry about this guy. Yeah, He's never going to be a chancellor. What are you, crazy? He's a nut. He's a nut job.
So can I follow up on an earlier story?
By the way, Hitler did everything he said he would.
Yep.
20 years before. It was all laid out. And everybody said, oh, he won't. No. He'll be much more presidential when he's chancellor.
Yeah.
See, so why do you think Comcast is going to magically change its?
No, you're right. I was playing devil's advocate. But I do think it's important if we're going to have this conversation in public, that we acknowledge that there might be some merit to the other point of view and figure out a way. That's what politics is that we can
agree with that
we can come to a mutual agreement that everybody agrees. Yeah, this is
if you're dealing with rational people with rational interests.
Well, and
you're not.
I think they have. They are. So, well, are we talking about the ISPs or are we talking about Trump?
I think we can stipulate that Comcast is greedy and Comcast is going to maximize profits.
Again, I would say, okay, greedy, maximizing profits, maybe. I say, look at that worldview. And also, and I will tell you, I am pro net neutrality because I am pro consumer. But I spent years talking to engineers at telcos and cable companies, and I understand at a very fundamental level how these networks work. So I can understand their arguments.
Yes.
And so I would say,
yes,
when I'm talking to you guys about stuff, I am putting that perspective in there. That's why I can explain wireline and physics.
Right.
But
that's why we're delighted to have you here.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Because you bring that perspective. Yes. Yeah. But to your point about the politics, Leo, you have a world where we believe in states' rights, except when it comes to this, and no, you can't, the state can't actually decide, or the city can't actually decide to do its own internet rules. Sorry.
I'm a cynic. I mean, that's, you know, it's same as it ever was. I mean, going back to the founding fathers, this is, you know, everybody pretends.
No, but you got a worldview, a party that says we believe in pushing down to the states, except in this case, we're not allowed to.
Right.
You believe on the one hand that we should open up all ownership regulations around newspapers and TV stations. We should let Sinclair merge with Tribune, going way beyond the old bounds. But CNN, no, you can't be part of AT&T because they don't like you. When you're dealing with inconsistent, politically motivated, emotionally motivated people, then your effort to find that common ground in negotiation falls apart. That's all.
Yep.
If you know Comcast is greedy, you can figure out how to deal with that. You can serve the greed. But when you're dealing with people who are irrational or doing things for spite, it's a lot harder.
Yeah.
And speaking of spite.
Yes.
To update our earlier story, it appears that Peter Thiel is trying to buy the assets of Gawker.com so that he can shut it down, so he can erase the archives.
Okay. So just for those who don't know, Gawker.com, which was founded by Nick Denton and was a scandalous website that spoke truth to power and sometimes...
It pretty much presaged the entire sex stories we're going through now.
Let's in fact, in many cases, they were the first to report on Louis C.K.'s rumors, for instance.
Yes.
But they went one step too far when they published a sex tape of Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan went to sue them in Florida court, but unbeknownst to us, Hulk's lawsuit was funded by this billionaire, Peter Thiel, because Peter Thiel had his own axe to grind with Gawker because they had, I think inappropriately, outed him some years before as a gay man, and he didn't like that so much. So he was happy to have this lawsuit, funded it, and won, and essentially bankrupted Nick Denton and Gawker. Nick sold Gawker to, I forgot, somebody. But
Fusion,
that's
Fusion.
Right. Fusion has the assets.
Univision.
Which owns Fusion. So Univision has the assets. I know the nasty Gawker story.
No, that was not sold. The Gawker.com name and archive was not sold. It is in the estate of the company once known as Gawker.com.
So those pages are still up. That's the point.
Somebody's trying to buy that in the bankruptcy court because that's what's still in bankruptcy. And Thiel is saying that he's the most qualified buyer.
Wow. Well, I can't. I mean, if he takes it all down, I wouldn't be unhappy.
I would.
It's a bad story. It's a bad story. But, you know, they kind of did the same thing to me that they did to Peter Thiel. And I'm not a public figure. I'm not. You could say, well, I agree. You need to out people who are using their power and doing bad things. But they also were completely willing to publish, you know, salacious, sometimes untrue gossip as a means to generate page views as well. Let's not forget that. And I don't think it was right for them to out Peter Thiel. That's not germane to any conversation.
Well, I think it was, I mean, I'm not arguing that it was right to, but it was one of those open secrets that they were like, you know what? Let's just pop it out there.
Okay.
Kind of like Kevin Spacey. But now that's out there.
That's different. Peter Thiel being gay doesn't mean there was no assertion that he had molested people or done anything wrong or illegal.
It was actually a piece that was in tribute.
I think
as far as Gawker was in tribute to anything.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I understand why Peter would be pretty upset about it. I don't blame him.
He doesn't have to sell his Facebook stock to afford Gawker.
He can afford Gawker.com. He could, that's his lunch money probably. Wow. So is Nick selling it off? Is that what's going on?
No, it's the estate. It's in bankruptcy. So the creditors, I guess, own it, whatever that may mean.
Nick's not dead. So it's not the estate. It's the
A company has an estate.
Yeah.
When you go to bankruptcy, the
really?
Yes, company has
that's what they call it? Oh, I apologize. Yeah. You knew what you were talking about. So the assets of Gawker are still lying around. Wow. He was apparently not told that he could have bid
for it. That's what they complained about in court, yes.
Yeah. Hmm. That would be kind of...
But he was not
Shakespearean.
A creditor of any sort, right? It was.
Oh, they didn't owe him money. Oh, actually, Hogan. They might have. Oh, Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan might have had rights. I think in this case,
yeah, he might be owed
and
money.
And Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel was just the funder. Right. He had no. Right. He had no standing.
Hulk might owe him money. Hulk might have said, "I'll give you half of the settlement."
Or Hulk will buy Gawker.com and then sell it to Peter Thiel and make even more money.
Yeah, I don't think that would be bad. Oh, I know you guys. I'm a bad person. What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, there's more. Hi. There's more. Yeah, I was trying.
Are you satisfied that we've done the net neutrality thing? I mean, I think all that we could do at this point, it's not a done deal by any means. Congress might intervene. The courts certainly will intervene. There will be lawsuits galore. And, you know, I mean, maybe your internet will get more expensive. Maybe some startups that would have been nice won't. And maybe, who knows, your cable company will come to you with a tier plan that says you have to pay more if you want to see YouTube.
So here, I'll say one thing, and this is just part of it, but I'll in keeping with despair. So I wrote a little something about net neutrality. And what is most frustrating is that we have spent so much time and effort lobbying this, educating people about this, regulating this, and we regulated it. Although we started this process all the way back in like 2005 with those pillars of the open internet from Chairman Michael Powell, after a tiny ISP, Green River, in I think Wisconsin, was blocking Skype. So there were actual harms. We debated them for years. We actually created rules, went to court. Court said, no, you got to create them this way. So then we created new rules, which were the 2015 Tom Riley rules. And that's what government is supposed to do. That is what we do. And then to have someone come in after the fact and just take it away. Like, it wasn't causing problems. We have not seen a decrease in investment from the ISPs. We have not seen problems on their end. To take it away smacks of corruption. It is a step too far. It's so frustrating to me to see this, because the way forward would be to say, okay, let's find the actual problem and address that, not to rescind rules that we made in response to an actual problem. And maybe this is just me, but it's...
Well said, comrade.
That's
well
fair. Said. Yeah.
So, okay.
Well, on a lighter note... We want a lighter note?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, please.
You can now have a MARTA bus drive in front of your Facebook profile.
I thought that was very funny.
That was the
This is what
best
the internet is for.
This is so it,
exactly.
So they were blowing up the Georgia Dome, imploding it, as it were. And was it the Weather Channel that was?
It was.
Yes, Weather Channel.
Weather Channel was broadcasting. Listen to the countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And just as it's about to implode, here comes the bus, blocking the view entirely.
I laughed till I cried when I saw this.
Is the guy who's swearing, is he like from the Weather Channel?
I think so.
Oh, you missed it.
So now somebody has set up a thing so you can have a MARTA bus, an Atlanta bus, drive in front of your Facebook.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh,
but
I want to do that.
It'll last for about 36 hours.
Oh, but. I'm going to do that on my, that's awesome. Are you doing that?
No. I'll forget how to undo it.
This is the internet. This is what it's good for. And yes. what if you could not create those silly little apps because it would cost extra? Right there.
Okay. So wait a minute. Search for dome implosion. Okay. So this is where you go, and then you can search for a theme, dome implosion. Okay. All right. Here we go. And then I'm you can drag it. Yeah, okay. There, actually, that's a pretty good. I'm going to do that.
That's pretty good, funny. Yeah,
that's my new profile picture. I like it. It looks like I'm looking right over the bus. That's perfect.
Is the bus actually going to drive in?
I don't think it moves. I think it's just got. Did you just pop a cool one there, Stacy?
It's sparkling water, but yes.
Is it a, what do you call it? Topo Moco?
It's not a Topo Chico.
Topo Chico?
It's just a straight up HEB sparkling water.
Or as Jeff Jarvis and I would say, Topo Gigio.
Or a Seltzer.
Seltzer. There were, do you remember the Seltzer sisters in San Francisco?
No.
Oh, God, yeah.
There were two women who bought all the old Seltzer bottles and were delivering Seltzer to your door in classic 1920s glass Seltzer bottles. And when you finished them, you would put the empty, just like in the Three Stooges, where they put the Seltzer on your pants. And then when you were done with it, you put it on your doorstep and you get a new delivery, the Seltzer sisters. I had them on my old radio show on KNBR to make an egg cream for us all.
Do you know
there is no egg in egg creams?
Right.
Just chocolate syrup and seltzer.
I never liked them much.
Wait, did you know that pumpkin pie filling doesn't have pumpkin pie in it?
No, it does too.
No.
Is it? Okay, butternut squash is pumpkin pie filling.
Really? Because I love butternut squash. What, is that true?
This is what I learned. This is what I learned.
Did you look at the can? How did you know?
No. It was a 2014 Huffington Post article. Here's why your pumpkin pie probably has no pumpkin in it at all.
It's a butternut squash pie. But if you called it that, nobody would eat it.
Oh, whoops.
This is from Kitchen. What's actually in your canned pumpkin puree? Well, you know, butternut squash is better. The label says 100% pumpkin. But apparently this is good.
The FDA says,
the USDA says pumpkin and squash, close enough. The canned product prepared from clean, sound, properly matured, golden-fleshed, firm-shelled, sweet varieties of either pumpkins and squashes. That's by washing, stemming, cutting, steaming, and reducing to a pulp. That can be called pumpkin.
Oh, look, from time.com. Relax, that canned pumpkin isn't actually squash at all.
Oh, you see? Well, okay, another internet meme, squashed.
Pumpkin.
So to speak.
Now, I did read somewhere that pumpkins were actually, it's a generic term for like an orange squash.
Oh.
So.
There you go.
That is.
We always.
That's another question.
We always used sugar pumpkins, the little sugar pumpkins for the pumpkin pie.
Cantaloupes.
And I wouldn't use a cantaloupes, but when you use real pumpkins, then you know there's real pumpkins in there.
Can I tell you my this is why I can't cook really stupid pumpkin pie story real quickly?
Yes.
So in my young adult days, when I was trying to impress a young lady and thought I would show her how multi-talented I was, yes. I wanted to cook dinner.
I did the same thing, yes.
So I got a recipe from my mother for the pie that I loved, pumpkin chiffon pie. Mm. And the recipe was written out in that recipe ease, which I didn't quite understand. So I got to the 1 1/2 canned pumpkins. So I thought that's really stupid because the sizes are different, but fine. I took a can of pumpkin and I took another half of can.
Jesus.
Luckily, it stayed together as a glob, so I could then calculate before there was a Google how much I had to measure and take out to make pumpkin pie. Because I had to buy everything, including salt and pepper for that pie, I think the pie at the time in pre-adjusted dollars cost me $29.
Wow.
Wow, Jeff.
And it didn't, she wasn't impressed.
Of course, the chat room has found video of the Seltzer sisters.
What do I do? Uh-huh. Yes, we do. And that's kind of an interesting thing. We have with us two young ladies. In fact, we just moved back from the East Coast. They're called the Seltzer Twins, and they have come up with a brand new business.
That's Ross McGuess. Good morning, San Francisco. They were married. I can't remember her name.
Freda Silver, and I want Sid Garner.
Ross, was it Ann and Ross?
How you doing?
Look at the hair. This is 1981.
I'm curious. You know, you can do the same thing that you do with the old seltzer bottles. I mean, you could do the same thing, couldn't you, with perhaps Calistoga water of the bottled waters we
look
get
at
today?
Those bottles. That's what they looked like. They were
as good. This is about triple the carbonation, and it does not contain any salt.
Aha, very important, because a lot of folks say, oh, boy, I'm really going to lose weight if I stick with that stuff. Not necessarily, right? How did you guys happen to come up with the idea?
Morning television, nothing worse.
And actually make a business.
Nothing worse. Are we worried that Google is collecting Android users' locations even when location services are disabled? They say they're going to stop it, by the way.
So this is an error. This is where I'm like, you know, guys, as we connect things to the internet, we have to actually think about what those things do, the data they collect, and what happens to it. I mean, Google's response to this was basically like, yeah, we were trying something out. We didn't realize it. Okay, we'll stop. So, like...
In January of this year, says Google, we began using cell ID codes as the code from the tower as an additional signal to further improve the speed and performance of message delivery. However, we never incorporated cell ID into our network sync system, so that data was immediately discarded and we updated it to no longer request cell ID. But for a few months, they were, from the beginning of the year, collecting where your cell tower, nearest cell tower was, even if location services were turned off. This seems to me to be a tempest in a teapot, but I...
It's a legit issue. I mean, I think if you say you're not collecting location service or location data and you actually are...
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, the actual operation of a cell phone requires it to figure out what cell tower it's on.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of... admittedly, that's the carrier doing that, and they don't... They obviously discard it. But your phone kind of has to know where it is in space.
Right, but Google collecting that information is a new party collecting that information.
I agree.
And Google has a lot of other information about you.
Right.
I can see why it's an issue. I can see, I mean, remember Street View collecting all that Wi-Fi data?
Right.
That was even more so.
Again,
that was accidental.
And bogus.
Right. I'm not saying it's malicious. I'm just like, guys.
But the problem is each of these things is presented as if it is malicious.
Well, that's the media. Right? I love us in the media, but you know,
God, I hate us.
Well, even Steve Gibson, who is normally very conservative about this kind of thing, and you know, really, I don't want to say paranoid, but paranoid. Even he said, "Look, if you're carrying around a cell phone, you're kind of carrying around a location device. I mean, that's just if you don't want that. I mean, that's kind of the nature of how cell phones work. It's just, you know, Google says we're not going to do it anymore. We never meant to keep this data." I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on this.
Yeah, I will.
I'm glad they got caught. Let's put it that way. It's good they got caught.
Yeah, and I think it's important that companies like pay attention to this stuff.
Right.
Because someone could actually, if that data is going someplace, somebody who notices it could actually take advantage of
it. Yeah.
And that's not great.
Hey, an update to our story about weird kids' videos on YouTube. They've taken down a kids' quote channel. Exploitive kids channel called Toy Freaks, and they are tightening their child endangerment. Now I want to see Toy Freaks. Apparently criticized for its violent, seemingly exploitive videos featuring a dad and his daughters, which many said bordered on abuse.
Jesus.
Wow.
Then that's a different problem here.
Yeah. They were enforcing their child endangerment policies.
Jeez. Stacey, did you ever see this?
No, because I don't like videos of kids put in distressing situations.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But you know, so this wasn't a channel aimed at kids. This is teenagers love this. My son used to watch, you know, your daughter will get old enough where my son used to love watching what they call fail videos, which is just people wiping
videos
out. Yeah, it's like, but worse, it's just wiping out after wipeout after wipeout. It looks like horrible maiming and disfigurement is happening. And he just howl and laugh. And that's just, you know, that's how people are. Michael, our 14-year-old, used to love those. What is the, and it turned out they were fake, but I thought they were real when I first saw them. The one where the dad gets mad at his son because he's playing video games all day, and he takes all his video games, puts them out on the lawn, and mows them with his riding mower. And the kid just goes crazy. And it turned out, then they made a whole bunch more of them, and it turned out the whole thing was a great act. But that, and I imagine that's the same thing with Toy Freaks. And kids and teenagers, you know, they love this. It's a little transgressive, feels a little dangerous. And the thing is, they were probably making a lot of money. And these are pretty little kids.
Yeah.
You know, Annabelle freaks out when a real spider attacks her. You know, and these are little kids. So the dad probably is kind of maybe exploiting his children a little bit. But the kids love
argue
it.
That
they love
parents,
it.
Parents on social media are exploiting their children all the time.
Parents have done this since showbiz was invented. The
right.
Stage mom. Hey, very good news for people who use Echo shows, which I know isn't a lot of you. I love the Echo show. That's the Echo, Amazon Echo with a screen. YouTube's back.
My corgi videos are back.
Yay!
Corgi's at breakfast. La, 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 la.
And you can watch the show. You can say, Echo, watch, not listen, watch This Week in Google on YouTube, and it will play it. Unfortunately, it plays it in, it, before it had a really nice kind of full screen interface. Now it plays it as if you're looking at the YouTube webpage. And I think what happened, I don't know, but I'm guessing Google said, no, no, we want people to see those coming up next videos and auto-playing the next video and all that stuff. We put a lot of time into that. Can you leave our interface alone? Is it... go ahead.
Scooter X says, Amazon says that saying, Madam A, zoom in, will swap to full screen mode.
Yes. Yes.
That's a good tip.
It's not quite the way it used to be, but it is good. So Echo, zoom in. Is it the case, it's just, or is it just me, that whenever you see Mark Zuckerberg out in public, he looks like Data, the android from Star Trek. Doesn't he just kind of, there's something.
If you were him, how would you have, how could you possibly have a self-image? Except knowing that you're constantly on camera.
Yeah, I guess.
It's like being raised in the White House.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm sure Barron Trump will look like that in a few years. Interesting article, Alexis C. Madrigal writing in The Atlantic, The Education of Mark Zuckerberg. He's been to 30 states now.
What? I quoted part of this when I saw it in the rundown on Twitter and drove me a little bit nuts. Where is it here? Most recently, for example, this was how he described his major takeaway from his travels at the concluding stop of the University of Kansas. Quote, the thing that struck me everywhere I went, and I have stories from every state that I visited, was how central communities are to people, he said. You don't say, says Madrigal. This level of naivete sounds unbelievable. You know, F me. Media, what? Which you're part of.
We're a little cynical, aren't we?
Alexis. Media never paid any attention to communities. We treat everybody as a mass. We treat everybody the same. We give no respect to tons of communities in this country.
You're right.
And this guy comes along and actually wants to put communities together, and you have to mock him. Look in the mirror first, fella. Look in the mirror.
Good point.
Media have not respected communities. Mark Zuckerberg respects communities a hell of a lot more than we do in media. Thank you for that commercial interruption.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. I still wonder why he's doing 30 states barnstorming and meeting with people if he's not running for president.
Because I think
he's probably getting out of the bubble.
It's marketing. Yeah, all right. That's fair.
He wants to sell to people in all those places. He wants to know who they
are.
He
needs to understand what they need, what they want.
Yeah.
But the truth is, I'll be honest, all he really needs to do is let the algorithm do its work. It's doing great. You know, they've got all the signals about what people want, and they just keep, you know, feeding it back in a feedback loop, and the news feed just gets better and better and better from that point of view. Do you think he really has to care about anything else? All he has to do is make sure that
it's... Yeah, because there's a next phase of Facebook.
If he moves...
Well, because the first phase was friend-to-friend only, then, you know, friend-to-college, then town and environs. Now he says it's community and the polis in society. And so I think you've got to fundamentally rethink parts of what Facebook does. It is tuned now to give you just your friends. And if it's really going to...
I think I disagree with you. I think I think everybody's Facebook feed is unique because it's tuned to give you more of what you engage with, isn't it?
Yeah, but it tends to...
I don't see a lot of my friends. I see a lot of you.
I see... No. Because you have no friends.
I have a Jeff Jarvis feed on my Facebook. but the thing is, I think no two feeds will probably look alike because...
They don't.
Yeah.
That's what he said to me long ago. No two people ever see the same Facebook.
Yeah.
But I think there is something to understanding what communities do together, what the hell they talk together. That's different from what Facebook is now. And I think you've got to get out and talk to people and understand how they live among other people to have a better sense of how you can serve that. Don't forget that it's that line that he said in front of me many years ago that I've quoted on the show that I love so much. That when a certain publisher of a major newspaper in the U.S. begged him, how do we make communities? How do we create communities? Zuckerberg said, you don't make communities. They already exist. You should ask them how to help them do what they already do better. And his prescription for that was that you bring them, his quote, elegant organization. So he knew how Harvard operated. He knew how that community operated. He knew what people wanted to get dates, shall we say. And he created a structure around that. That was a contained world and relatively simple. Now it's so complex that I think he does need to get out and be inspired by getting among people. And, you know, we yell about the filter bubble of Silicon Valley, and he gets out, and then we mock him for it.
All right. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to give Mark the benefit of the doubt.
Snobby media piece.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah.
I mean, that's a little unfair of me. He went to – did you read it, Stacey?
Chance
was long. So I didn't mean to make you point that out. I'm sorry. But he basically analyzes everything that Zuckerberg has said with the word community since, you know, his birth. And I don't know that it needs that kind of criminology. He's more apparent. He's not as mysterious as he seems. He says, I think communities are important. I want to have better tools to help communities connect. That's what he's doing.
I might believe that, except it feels like Facebook, when faced with this issue of whether Russians were using Facebook to manipulate the electorate last year, Facebook denied it for more than a year and then finally admitted it. Makes me think that there may, I mean, do you think that they really genuinely didn't know it was happening until they did?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because it's the same thing with Al Franken. Before questioning Google and Facebook, rubles. About how did you not know about the rubles? Yeah. Because they weren't looking for that signal. In this vast system with billions of ads, they had no reason to go looking for rubles and political ads until once it was pointed out, it was, oh, crap. Right. Yeah. All right.
I'll and give now you the benefit of the doubt.
Look for it, we can find it.
But I would submit that we have to keep a really eagle eye on them, that they have to, there is a, because of the power that Facebook and Google and others wield, Amazon, they need extra scrutiny. And they, the standards have to be very high for them.
Right. And the way that occurs, in my view, is that they should be smart enough, and they're not yet, to get ahead of all this and to set standards and principles that go beyond current expectations. And be key in those standards, and Stacey's talked about this a lot, is the transparency, because only with transparency can we keep up on this. So let's go to a different story. The fact that you can target an ad to not African-Americans.
Right.
That's abhorrent and awful, right? But I can also see why somebody, Black Lives Matter, might come along and say, I want to target this message to people of a race. Then anything that can be used will get misused. The way the platform should do this in this case is to say, here's a very easy neon way. If you see something misusing this tool, tell us immediately, and we're going to have staff, and we're going to get on it.
But how would you know? These are dark ads. So basically, ProPublica discovered they were doing it. Facebook said, we'll stop. And then ProPublica tested it again. The way they were doing it, they would buy ads, but they would say, I don't want any African Americans to see this. Actually, they had a really kind of funny list of the kinds of people that they may or may not want to see it. And they were able to buy those ads. So it's not redlining exactly. But it's kind of using Facebook's tools to target advertising.
So one way to deal with that is to make every single ad on Facebook transparent. Right? Every ad in a newspaper is transparent.
Well, so far, they've only talked about doing it with political ads, right?
Political ads. I think if you really want to think this through, you say, let's make every ad transparent and all its targeting criteria transparent.
Good.
And put an API to them. And then the public can help you keep them honest, because inevitably someone's going to come along and they're going to game the system. They're going to do something awful. Facebook does not watch for rubles until they know they need to watch for rubles. They need help to do that. If they were A, transparent in the first place, and B, had very easy mechanisms to people report, and then C, they actually acted on that.
It's kind of interesting, though. I mean, I've heard of ad targeting. When people buy ads on Twitter, they're targeting a group.
This is kind of untargeted.
I've never heard of negative targeting. So ProPublica said, we don't want ads to be shown to certain categories like African-Americans, but also mothers of high school kids, people interested in wheelchair ramps. We don't want the ad to be shown to people interested in wheelchair ramps. We don't want the ad to be shown to Jews, to expats from Argentina, to Spanish speakers. You could see how that would be used to discriminate. I'm surprised Facebook has that tool.
No, stop for a second, right? People interested in wheelchair ramps. Do you want to advertise to them? Yes, right? I want to sell a wheelchair. I want to sell a better wheelchair ramp. That's a perfectly logical, okay.
Yeah, but I don't understand why you would have a tool that says not to sell to them.
Okay, let's say you want to sell skateboards to people and you don't want to waste your money. You don't want to put people who have wheelchair ramps or, you know, some better example than that.
I think you're as an advertiser, you're more likely
to exclude.
All you have to do is say, I want people who would be likely to buy skateboards. I mean, really, is there, I don't know, maybe I don't understand.
Yeah, oh, no, yeah. Well, so I want to advertise to this product to women.
But not married
retired women.
Right.
So please make sure to exclude women who have babies. I don't know. I can't come up with a good example.
Okay,
but
so there are some conceivable reasons why you would want exclusion.
And so get misused.
Yeah.
And so if you have anything possibly related to race, somebody in the company, yes, a chief risk officer, has to stop, yes, and say, whoa, let's make sure we limit how this can be used. And maybe they are and messed up. I don't know what they did. But there's legitimate reasons to target and not target groups. You know, people, expats from Argentina. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with that. I may want to sell them tickets on Avianca.
Yeah. Fine. So, you know, and this is the problem with something operating at this kind of scale with automated systems. Is you're going to, all sorts of things like this are going to happen. All you can
we've
say
got to
is
become more catch them and reasonable fix it. About that.
The real issue is that ProPublica, that this issue was raised before and Facebook said they would fix it and they still haven't, I guess.
Yes, that's the issue.
Yeah. Twitter's testing a tweet storm feature. Oh, joy. Black Friday. Are you all going to? Stacey, I know you get in line 3 a.m. at your local Walmart store to get some of those doorbuster specials, right?
You know, last year I actually did go to Target.
Did you?
Thanksgiving evening. We wanted to pick up a Nintendo DS. Maybe it was the year before that.
Oh, you had to.
Did you succeed?
We did. We it was touch and go, but we did succeed.
Fight anybody?
We did not fight anybody. I am not ready to fisticuff.
Well, now you got to get the Nintendo Switch. Forget the DS.
We have that.
Oh, good. I'm sure your daughter lives on that. That thing is super fun.
We just bought Rime on it, and ooh, I'm sad to see that game is not as good on the Switch as it is on the PS4. So
Zelda was great, and Mario was great. Mario Kart or whatever it was great. Oh, well, I won't buy a Rime then.
It's a it's a beautiful game. I'm very
It sounds familiar. R-I-M-E or R-H-Y-M-E?
Mm-hmm. R-I-M-E.
Oh, you're so, a young Stacey, boy you who is waking up in a mysterious island. Oh, it is pretty.
Sorry.
It's so pretty.
I'll have to get this on Steam. I'm really excited by games like this that are not kind of the traditional, shoot 'em up.
Yeah. Well, that's there have always been games like this. They're just not
huge sellers.
It's popular.
Well, they were PC games. I mean, remember Myst. Games.
Yeah, but the world is dominated now by the Call of Duties and, Grand Theft Autos of the world. This is looks a little bit like Zelda.
It's a story game, and what's nice is there's all kinds of other things. I think as people realize that there's a huge market for games that isn't shoot 'em ups.
Right.
I
hope. Call of Duty World War II, the new version, sold $500 million dollars worth of units in 3 days.
Yeah.
So if you're a game developer, you're looking at that going, of course, Cuphead went platinum in a couple of weeks. Still shooting, but at least it's a little different, something a little different. I don't know. I think that's the problem is people want to make hits. It's like movies.
Well, I mean, if I wrote a book, I'd want it to be a bestseller. Yeah.
But you wouldn't write it to be a bestseller.
No, because that
like
would
Eric
most
Siegel
assuredly
did with Love Story.
Oh.
That's an old story. He just said, I am going to, he was a, I think, a, was he a Harvard professor? He said, I'm going to write a bestseller. And he wrote a 1970 bestseller that was as big as it can get.
Well, I'll train a neural net to do it now.
Now you could do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love story.
Love story. Jenny Cavalieri.
Means nothing to her. Nothing.
Do you know Love Story?
No.
Oh, my God.
I wasn't born in 1970.
Where do I begin to tell the story of?
Is the tearjerker of all tearjerkers.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, well, beaches?
Worse.
Wow.
Oh, you should watch Love Story. You'd like it.
Really?
Actually, don't watch the movie. Read the book. It's a better book. It's a good book. It's actually a wonderful book. Okay. Yeah. It's a love story. It's a sappy love story, but it's not a happy love story. Are you all going to buy a new Tesla truck? I would like to. Imagine arriving to work in this.
I don't think it makes that noise, though.
No, it doesn't. In fact, I called it the Tesla diesel on another show, and John said, not a diesel.
Let me explain to you how this Tesla thing works, Leo.
Not a diesel. I think of diesel as a synonym for big truck. It's not. Oh. Weird, though. It only has a one seat. You can't have, no hitchhikers. And unless they go in the sleeping compartment. 500-mile range. There is a frunk.
That's where the hitchhiker goes.
The hitchhiker goes in the frunk. It also held, interestingly, a Tesla Roadster, an updated Roadster, that goes from 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 1.9 seconds. That'll pin your head to the back of the seat.
You know, already ludicrous mode hurts.
I can't do it. I have insane. You have ludicrous?
No, or is it ridiculous? Whatever their high...
Insane.
A friend of mine has it, and I was like, yeah, too much.
I can't... I start to red out when I do it, so I don't dare do it because I know I'll go unconscious and drive into a wall. So, yeah, I definitely don't need anything more than just average acceleration. Well, I think 0 to 60 is about the same as 0 to 100 kilometers per hour. I think that's pretty close. Mm-hmm. That's why I think they quote, for some reason, 0 to 100. Maybe that's the European story I was reading. And the Roadster. And actually, I don't know why. Maybe I've got Tesla mania, but I decided to put a Model 3 deposit down.
I've had one for a while. So mine's coming...
Both of you?
I put mine down way back in the day of craziness.
So if you do it today, it's 12 to 18 months. And I'm hoping it's going to be 18 months more than 12.
Well, you know what? If you want mine, we're kind of debating, do we want the 3 or not? We're about to have to make a decision.
I wouldn't get it today because I feel like...
they're not putting the seats in?
Yeah, I feel like they're kind of... They still have some issues to work out.
Yeah, that's kind of our thought.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I think a year and a half from now, it might be all right.
You're a very optimistic man, Leo.
I'll tell you
the
why,
theme
Stacey.
I'm seeing through this.
No, I'm despairing. Didn't you get the despair? You missed the despair?
I did get the despair, but you default to optimism.
I do. I default to optimism. That's why when I despair, it's so despairing. It's so bad. The reason is because I only leased the Model X. So in a year and a half, about 18 months, I have to give it back. And I thought maybe I'll trade it in for a Model 3 by then. Maybe it'll be done.
Well, the Model X had its problems too.
Yes, it did. So. Yes. But I'm all in on electric.
I'm all in on electric, and once you drive a Tesla, it's really hard to go to a Prius or a Bolt.
Have either of you been on a trip where you've had to stop at a charging station, or you always use it locally enough that you don't have to?
Yeah, the superchargers are great.
Yeah, the superchargers are nice.
Have you gone to a trip longer than your range?
Yes.
Yeah. And how long do you hang out?
About 20 minutes.
Half an hour.
There's the supercharger, because we drive to Houston a lot. There's a supercharger in Columbus that is next to a Mexican food place. So we'll stop in
there. Oh, queso and electricity.
Ooh.
Cheese and juice.
We're going to have a Nissan Leaf, the new Nissan Leaf, which comes out in the United States in January on the new screensavers in a couple of weeks. They're coming up, and we're going to take a test drive. That's their all-electric car.
What's the range like on that?
It's under 100 miles. It's not really long. But that's the best, was the best selling electric car, I think, last year.
If I could afford to own another car, I would love it for daily commuting. But
electric's nice. You just feel good about it. Of course, electricity is very expensive in California, but that's why we got the solar panels.
Electricity in Austin is super expensive.
Is it expensive? Yeah.
16 cents per kilowatt hour.
18.
Woo!
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 Okay. You win.
I win.
I have no idea.
Not a game I wanted to win.
You win for losing.
Kaspersky says, yeah, well, we got NSA secrets, but we didn't steal them. I would still not run Kaspersky antivirus if I were you. I wouldn't run any antivirus, but I definitely wouldn't run a Kaspersky. They said, well, yeah, it's part of how the antivirus works that it exfiltrated the NSA viruses, a 45-megabyte zip archive that contained source code, malicious executables, and four documents bearing U.S. government classification markings. So when it got to Kaspersky, because that's what automatically happens, they quarantine it and send it off to the main office in Russia for analysis. The company analyst who manually reviewed it quickly determined it contained confidential material within a few days. And at the direction of the founder, Eugene Kaspersky, the company deleted all the materials except for the malicious binaries. And then they created a special software tweak to prevent it from being downloaded again. The problem with all of this is you don't know who to believe. I don't know who to believe. Why take a chance?
I don't either. Yeah. But don't be. May I go back to another story?
Yes, you may.
So backing up what you said, Stacey. So Tim Wu, inventor of the phrase net neutrality, has a piece in the Times saying,
I blame Tim for this whole thing.
Yeah, no, why the courts will have to save net neutrality. And in it, he says, not only have, as free press has demonstrated, investment has gone up since these rules have been in place, but he says, and I quote, Mr. Pai faces a more serious legal problem because he is killing net neutrality outright, not merely weakening it. He will have to explain to a court not just the shift from 2015, but also his reasoning for destroying the basic bans on blocking and throttling, which have been in effect since 2005. And have been relied on extensively by the entire internet ecosystem. This will be a difficult task.
I hope Good. So, yes.
I hope so, too.
I mean, there is a reason that a Republican commissioner that later became a lobbyist enshrined the anti-blocking and discrimination clauses as the four pillars of open internet access. Michael Powell, 2005. I used to have these memorized, but now I don't. Used to be a thing.
You didn't
thing
think you needed them again, right, Stacey? It was enshrined. That was it. It was over.
When I stopped covering net neutrality, I celebrated so hard. And then I couldn't stop. I couldn't look away.
I'll take another queso, please. No net neutrality.
Let's take a break. Come back. We got to get to queso. It's soon to be queso time. What was it you said? Juice and cheese?
Cheese and juice
time. Coming up, just a little bit, our show today brought to you by Video Blocks from Storyblocks. If you do video production, you know that you got to have pictures to match the words. You got to have vivid imagery. But if you have to shoot it all, that could blow the budget out. If you have to buy it from some of these other services, that could blow the budget out. But Video Blocks by Storyblocks gives you sound effects for podcast production, video backgrounds, hero image on your blog, great quality video stock footage and images, all for a fraction of the cost. Unlimited use. 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, 400,000 images, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds. Royalty-free, you can use it for commercial and personal projects forever. And they add new content all the time, so you'll never run out. Unlimited, $149 a year. Not a month, a year. Go to videoblocks.com/twig. You'll also get exclusive discounts on their marketplace clips. 5 million additional clips sold directly by the artists. So the artists get 100% of the money, but you get the discount. 90,000 customers love Video Blocks, including NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. We use it. It saved us a lot of money. We were paying a lot more. Go to videoblocks.com/twig. Get all the stock footage, audio, and images you could ever need for $149 a year. And save on millions more. Videoblocks.com/twig. From Storyblocks, we thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. Justice Department wants to block, so strange, AT&T Time Warner merger. That's what Trump said he would do when he was a candidate. But then for a while I kind of thought, oh, there's no bad mergers. Now the allegation is maybe it has something to do with the fact that Time Warner owns CNN. And we know that Mr. Trump is not a fan. It's an $85 billion deal.
The first thing I would say...
Let's ban autoplay video. How about that?
Yeah.
How about
when that? When does Chrome stop those?
I'm now on Firefox. I should go back to Chrome. This is Firefox Quantum. The new Firefox 57 is great. I really like it. Although, we'll talk about it in a second, some numbers from Mashable that say it's still not as fast as Chrome. Let's ask our political analyst, Jeff Jarvis, who appears regularly on CNN. What do you think? Is this Trump's revenge or?
Yeah, I'm appalled because there's no consistency to this. First off, as everyone points out, it's a vertical merger, not a horizontal merger. There is no major consumer impact. Where there is consumer impact, they'd be in a better, stronger position to negotiate that, to negotiate strictures on their behavior as they did with Comcast NBC Universal. You can certainly argue it's too big, but the way the law is set up now, just as Comcast NBC Universal could go through, so should and could this. And then third is that, as I said earlier, that they are about to let through Sinclair and Tribune as way, way too big, and Sinclair pretty scary. I saw the CEO of Sinclair, and he's kind of a creepy guy. And at an event,
Sinclair carried water for the Trump campaign all through the election season by requiring their local channel, their local news, to carry special press release, effectively press release stories in favor of the Trump campaign.
Yeah. And then you also have the FCC is about to take down the limitations, as I said earlier, of ownership rules. So big is fine with everything except, oh, you own CNN.
Yeah.
And it's a cloak to say they have to sell either CNN or DirecTV. It's the government trying to hamper the merger such that it doesn't happen just out of spite. Now, the interesting thing here is that just today there was a case around transsexuals in the military where Trump's own tweets entered into the case as they have in the Muslim bans.
Yeah, he keeps forgetting that that tweeting is material and can be used to discover intent. And the courts are very happy to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it'll come back in here, but it's just where do you turn your attention? Where do you turn your despair? Where do you, it's just.
And further evidence to support your case, the DOJ has reached out to 18 state attorneys general asking them to join the deal, and none of them have agreed to do so. So,
yeah.
While in the Philippines, I was forced to watch CNN, which I have not done in months, and again, I realized how bad and fake it is. Loser!
Well, the worst of it is probably him retweeting that, him being up CNN and the logo.
He retweeted that? He tweeted it again? Yeah. After the heat he got the first time? Oh, no. This was back in the first time. Yeah. FCC votes to abandon rural and low-income Americans.
That was in my tweet. Here's my tweet. I'm going to find it because someone... Here it is. Encapsulating all the despair. This FCC is going to destroy net neutrality, strangle competition in media, let wireline providers off the hook for replacing copper with a fiber or equivalent to copper, and kill broadband access for the poor. This is an unprecedented attack on consumers.
Ms. Higginbotham, that is the first good use I've heard of 280 characters.
Yeah, nice and long.
I needed all of them to get that all in there.
Why would they do this? Given that it is obviously politically going to be challenging to abandon low-income Americans. Why would Ajit Pai do this?
Well, Lifeline has been there's no secret. Lifeline.
First thing he did when he got into office. First thing he did was stop the Lifeline payments.
Well, it has been a boondoggle. Like, there, if you want to look at scandals for the SEC, you can look at how much carriers have gotten from Lifeline, big ones, small ones. The abuse of Lifeline is rampant. So, there's always been talk of getting rid of it. Usually reforming it is the issue, or replacing it with something more suited to the times, because Lifeline originally only was telephone, and then we had to fix it to offer broadband. And, you know,
Democratic FCC Commissioner Mignon Clyburn, who I like a lot, says the FCC continues to push its carrier first agenda. One of the things this allows carriers to do is discontinue phone service to rural users who don't make them any money. In the past, they've been required to offer something in return, but the now it's, hey, you got wireless, you got cellular. What do you want?
And that's what this is. That's the same reason that they're talking about the copper equivalency and getting rid of that. It's because it's expensive to push infrastructure out to the middle of the country where there are like five people.
And you have to, you know, this is, it goes back to the Depression when we had a rural electrification program. Once you say, well, electricity is important, or telephone service is important to everybody, the only people that are going to make that happen is the government, who's going to push carriers to do it or subsidize it themselves. It's in the national interest. And it's to abandon rural users and low-income users because, well, it's not very profitable. Is just, that's not what government is supposed to do.
I was going to say, we have been doing this since probably the 80s or early 90s. We have decided that government does nothing useful. There has been a constant debasement of what the government does and provides. So it makes sense that we would say no to this. And we have been leaving behind our most vulnerable for decades.
What is it Ronald Reagan used to say? The scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Well, so to your point, Stacey, I plugged this book last week and I'm still listening to it, and it's just wonderful. Americana, A 400-Year History of American Capitalism by Boo Srinivasan, an entrepreneur who dealt with this. It's just wonderful. And I was just listening today to, I didn't realize that it was John Wanamaker who built one of the early department stores, changing Wanamaker's retail entirely.
Yeah.
Who was Postmaster General. And he was the architect of rural free delivery.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And the point that Srinivasan makes is, before this, government actually did very few things, which, of course, is a world that certain people want to return to. But one of the things it did was postal service. And people were left out. People in remote farms without cars, before there were cars, had to go long distances to get mail, and they were cut off. And so RFD was a major equalizer in the country, right? So we did that
Did it enable Sears' robot catalog?
It enabled Sears.
Exactly.
We wouldn't have Amazon if it weren't for RFD.
And by the way, this is the retail chapter. So we talked about Montgomery Ward came first, then Sears. And it sounds so much like Amazon, because what they both did was they offered free returns.
Right.
So that you were safe to order.
It was safe to order.
And it killed the local stores and did all kinds of things. So Stacey, you're right. You start with RFD, then you go to rural electrification, then you go to the fees added onto our phones to assure phone service. And internet is vital. And we cut it all out.
What's this book called? I want to get it.
It's really good. Americana, A 400-Year History of American Capitalism.
All right.
By Boo Srinivasan.
And it is on Audible.
It is on Audible.
B-H-U.
And it's excellent. He reads the intro.
And Scott Brick is great. I love Scott Brick. All right.
Yeah, it's really, really well done. Really fascinating.
I'm putting it on my list right now. I'm going to buy it.
How many credits do you use a month?
I have two a month and I use them. Even if I don't read the books, I got them in my library. I figure I'm going to retire and I'm going to just listen to books all day.
I buy extras. Do the credits expire?
Yeah. Well, it depends on your plan. I think they can. Yeah.
I am just not an Audible. Like, I don't like listening to books.
Yeah. It's weird. Some people do.
I didn't either, Stacey. I made fun. In fact, you know what? I made fun of it. That's not really reading.
I know, right? People used to say that.
I wouldn't make fun of it. I'm like, I can't get into it.
Well, of course, I've got a long commute. And I've read and I've got to do, and I've got the freaking internet thing and all that. It's books that I don't want to have to underline. So it's either fiction or fascinating books like this. And it fills the hours, and it takes me away from the news sometimes, which I need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last night, I couldn't watch another bit of news. I went to bed, put on my put my earbuds in, and I listened to a book till I fell asleep. It was very nice.
So, but Leo, the problem with that is then you don't know where you left off.
Yeah, I know.
That didn't work very well.
No, well, yeah, you got to back up a little bit. That's all right. Did you read the Daily Beast piece? First of all, have you played HQ, the trivia game? Lisa and I like to play this. Never won.
Oh.
Crazy game. Last night, 112,000 people were online. It actually crashed the servers. They had to start half an hour late. And the idea is they have big jackpots. This was a $1,000 jackpot last night. You get 12 questions. If you answer them all correctly, you get a share of the jackpot. And last night, I think nine people got it right. So each won $111. Yeah, not bad for playing a 12. And it's fun. It's trivia. But part of the reason for its success, because it's, I mean, we've seen this a million times. You don't know Jack. I can go on and on. There are lots of games like this. Is Scott Rogowski. He is the host, former comic. He was actually about ready to throw it in and move away from New York. He's trying to make his career when he got this call to do this. And now he's such a big star on the HQ app. When he's not there, occasionally he's not there, all the chat says, "Where's Scott? Bring back Scott. We miss Scott." Well, apparently, because of this, the Daily Beast wanted to interview him. So they called him up. They interviewed him. They didn't talk about HQ particularly. They talked about his daily life. He's a cult figure now and how he can't walk down the street without people, you know, asking for selfies and stuff. One fan recently tweeted, "Everyone needs 15 minutes of Scott in their lives." Another, "If you don't like Scott from HQ, we can't be friends." So they wrote it what they call a lighthearted profile on his career. He agreed to do the interview. Daily Beast also reached out to HQ's PR and Russ Yusupov. He was one of the founders of Vine, who founded HQ, letting him know they wanted to do a story about Rogowski. Several hours later, we received an email from Yusupov saying HQ is not making Scott available to discuss his involvement with HQ in the media and the press. The reporter informed Yusupov we'd already interviewed Scott. The story was nearing publication, but call us with concerns. Then they let him read the story. Yusupov said, "You're completely unauthorized to write this story. I am going to fire Scott if you publish it. You're putting Scott's job in jeopardy. Is that what you want? Scott could lose his job." among other things that Yusupov objected to is the line Scott said that despite the attention, he's still able to walk down the street and order his favorite salad from Sweetgreen without being accosted. "He cannot say that," Yusupov shouted. "We do not have a brand deal with Sweetgreen. Under no circumstances can he say that." When asked to confirm that Rogowski can't say he personally enjoys eating at Sweetgreen, Yusupov said, "He cannot say that." Now, on the one hand, if you worked at Apple, you couldn't. And we try to get people from Google all the time, and they have to ask PR, and PR says no. So on the one hand, I think it is the company's right to say. One of the things they learned, the Daily Beast learned, is that Scott is not an employee but a contract employee.
Oh, well, then they can't do anything.
They can't really stop him from doing that.
They can fire him. But
they could fire him. You can fire him for anything, right?
You could fire him for nothing.
You could fire him for nothing. It's called at-will employment.
At will.
So Yusupov then, a day later, when the Daily Beast called letting him know that the story was going to be reframed around his comments. "We're going to talk about what you just said, Russ." Yusupov brought Rogowski onto the phone call and falsely claimed, "I never threatened to fire him." Poor Scott. "I have to feel bad. I don't want to fire Scott. Scott's our guy," says Rogowski. So I know none of this means anything. But from journalistically, though, who was in the right?
Well, why did the reporter read the quote to the dude?
Oh, he said,
about Sweetgreens.
Yeah, he said we refuse to do that. But in this case, he was so upset. We emailed him the article,
that's dumb.
You never do
but
that.
But you know what, Stacey? In Germany, when I get interviewed, they read the quotes to you.
That happens to me from time to time. In fact, that's kind of a form of fact checking. Yeah. Did I get this right?
Yeah, I'm worried about it.
Yeah.
But still, you would read it back to the person that you said it to, not to their CEO.
Yes.
But from a journalistic point of view, it's okay. I mean, that's not your issue. That might be an employer-employee issue. But if somebody from Google agreed to let me interview them, it's not my responsibility to make sure that he's okay. That Google's
oh, yeah,
okay.
That happens to me all the time. I mean, I get right. people telling me stuff all the time. They're like, oh, man, I shouldn't have said that. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Have you ever had anybody threaten to fire an employee if you ran the story?
No.
Although, if you work at Apple and you leak to the press, you do run the risk of losing your job.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Scott leaked anything, and I don't know if there's anything to leak. It's a trivia game online.
At some point, just think, people, about how this makes you look.
I mean, I feel bad for Scott Rogowski, the host, although he's probably in the catbird seat here. And Russ did not acquit himself well in this. I'm sure he's feeling bad right now.
Guys.
I know, you're getting hungry.
Like, well, not only...
We started early, I'm not just,
I know. I'm sorry that I was not there. I'm looking through our stories. I thought, oh, did we want to talk about Uber? And
oh, my God, Uber.
Oh, geez.
So this really goes back to Travis Kalanick's watch. Last October, Uber discovered there was a breach. 7 million drivers' records, including drivers' licenses, had been exfiltrated by bad guys. And 50 million customer records, not credit card numbers, they say, but names, addresses, and phone numbers. Uber was the hackers ransomed it. They contacted Uber, as I understand it, although the story seems to have changed a little bit. But the latest I understand is the hackers contacted Uber, say, for $100,000, we'll bury this. Uber paid the money and then made the hackers sign an NDA, swearing they would never tell anybody it happened. Of course, the new CEO over at Uber, I think when he discovered this, decided to reveal it. This was something Uber revealed. Right?
Yes.
Did I get that all correct?
Yes. Dara did explain that was something that he discovered. And
you're supposed to reveal data breaches.
Yeah. Well, so in Europe, that is the law now. What is the state in the U.S. about data breaches and your obligation?
I think you have to reveal them after a certain period of time, if certain PII. I'm pretty sure that's been the rules for at least a decade.
Let me ask Google.
Yeah. I'm like,
What is the U.S. law regarding revealing data breaches?
Well, you're not going to get a good answer.
Okay, here we go. 48 states, the D.C., Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands have enacted legislation requiring private or governmental entities to notify individuals of security breaches of information involving PII.
Good. And this would qualify as PII.
It says, most of the laws say who's responsible for doing it, so businesses, data brokers, government, blah, blah, blah. It defines PII, and then it also says these will define individually what constitutes a breach and the timing and how people have to be noticed.
The deal was arranged by the company's chief security officer, Joe Sullivan. He has been fired. Kalanick knew about it. And good on Dara for revealing it.
I mean, that's kind of like the bare minimum. I mean, this poor guy, it's like you're walking into a truck stop bathroom and you just know you're responsible for cleaning up. God only knows what.
I don't think that's true. Is that true? No, you just leave. You don't clean it up.
But he's a guy who said he's going to clean up.
He agreed to clean it up. Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. But he took the job knowing that it was when he walked into that bathroom.
Yeah.
It's going to be not exciting.
Khosrow Shahi said, none of this should have happened. I will not make excuses for it. While I can't erase the past, I can commit on behalf of every Uber employee. We will learn from our mistakes. We're changing the way we do business, putting integrity at the core of every decision we make, and working hard to earn the trust of our customers. I think that that's genuine. I've heard from many people that that Dara is a good person, and there's no reason not to believe that Uber wants to turn over a new leaf. But this is old history. They're going to... And I'm, you know what? Props to him for revealing it.
I don't think he had to. Once you know it,
you got to. Well, yeah, but except that those other guys didn't. Sullivan didn't. Kalanick didn't. Do you care that your every move at Thanksgiving will be tracked by a company called SafeGraph? This is funny because I saw the story like crazy about how people are not going to have Thanksgiving dinners with family members who voted differently than they did. And, you know, there's a big, lifestyle story in a lot of newspapers last week. But props to the outline and Adrian Jeffries, who said, well, wait a minute. How do they know that? And it turns out a company called SafeGraph has 17 trillion location markers for 10 million smartphones. Companies who make wallpaper apps, maps apps, and the like install the SafeGraph software. I'm sure SafeGraph pays them something. And then reports back on their users' locations for SafeGraph. So SafeGraph, for instance, says, well, we're going to identify your home as wherever you are between the hours of 1 and 4. And then they looked at where people were between 1 and 5 p.m., 1 and 4 a.m. Then they looked at where people were between 1 and 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day to see if they spent it at home or traveled. And then they looked at who you were with for Thanksgiving. And they were able to generate this data. They say it's fully anonymized, but how anonymized can it be if they know your political affiliation and whether you're with family members? Nothing to say, huh? What are you going to do?
See,
this I blame more than Google.
Well, Foursquare has this data.
Yeah, I give Foursquare, willingly give them my data.
You're willing to give it to them, and they sell it as data now, and they get value out of it, and they analyze it in new ways.
Yeah. All right.
Well, all of these apps now, I mean, for a while, people, that was a problem with these apps because you didn't have to give permissions. Like when you gave your permissions, you were like, oh, I'm
right.
So when your wallpaper is like, can I use location tracking?
Your wallpaper maybe should you'll be not like, ask like, for location tracking.
No.
Say no. there's the moral of the story.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Just say no.
So the paper Die Zeit, the online site in Germany, simulated Thanksgiving since they don't have it. They asked people at the end of about 5 stories binary opinion questions, like Germany already has enough refugees, Germany has more room for refugees. They then, on one day in June, had 12,000 people volunteer to meet someone near them who disagreed with them.
Oh.
One-on-one.
That sounds unpleasant.
There was sort of 6,000. No, there was. I asked, were there any fisticuffs? They said no. My favorite part of this was one woman was matched by the algorithm to her father-in-law.
Well, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but we will be having Thanksgiving dinner with some people of differing faiths.
Different worldviews?
Yes.
Different worldviews. Me too.
Yeah, that's life. It has always been that way. I grew up with long hair as a hippie. Don't you think we had those conversations during the Vietnam War? I watched All in the Family. They called me Meathead. There's a game... There's a game, very popular game, called PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's they call it a battle royale game. You're dropped into a world with 100 other people, and the last man standing wins. All of that aside, it's apparently a very fun game. They want to release it in China. So they've agreed to put socialist-friendly messages in the game. This is the beginning of it. I think we're going to see a lot more of this. The localization will provide, quote, healthy, positive cultural and value guidance. Socialist messages.
To sell it in China?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? While you're shooting somebody, at least to say, forward with a great economy.
Everyone sells a little of their soul to do business in China.
That's a minor thing, right?
Well...
Meanwhile, we've got artificial intelligence that can hunt down missile sites faster than a human, much faster than a human. A good use for AI.
They know too much.
No, these are our guys looking for missiles
well,
in
you
China.
Don't know that. They could be the other guys.
Yeah, well,
I was
sure.
About to say, I'm sure the other guys have.
They're
that
doing
too.
The same thing. Yeah. My uncle AI did this for the CIA. This was his job for years for the CIA, is analyzing satellite photography. I guess he'd be out of work now. An AI would be putting him out of work. You know what I need? I know what I need to turn around this culture of despair. I need a fine cup of blue bottle coffee. Oh, my goodness. Blue Bottle time. Blue Bottle is the best coffee you've ever had. The days are getting shorter. The weather's cooling off, and nothing complements an autumn day, a crisp autumn day, like a warm, delicious cup of coffee. Not just any coffee. Coffee so rich, so flavorful, so delicious. You'll say, where have you been all my life? I don't know. Have you had Blue Bottle when you've been in San Francisco, Jeff? It is uniquely amazing.
Darn good.
Darn good.
It is so good that I actually
gave
my neighbor some. Well, I did subscribe, but I gave my neighbor some, and she subscribed.
Nice.
She was like, this is delicious. Oh, and I was like,
it is.
Yes, it is.
You wouldn't think, I mean, you'd think coffee is coffee. But if you've been drinking Uban all your life, baby, that's not coffee. Look, this is, by the way, one of the things that makes Blue Bottle unique is when you subscribe, and they have a bi-monthly subscription, so you get coffee every other week. When you subscribe, they roast your beans within 48 hours of shipping. So it's, and it has the date right on it. And I have to tell you, fresh beans make a huge difference. They source amazing both blends and single farm coffees. I'm looking at the Costa Rica Chiripo Regulo de Rivas. And they have a whole card in here about the family that raised the coffee and about the notes, you know, the fudge or sweet aromas and fruit forward profiles, deep chocolatey espressos. Peak freshness. They haven't been sitting on a dusty shelf for hours or days or weeks or years. No, this is the freshest, most delicious coffee. They even have a decaf. I don't know why you drink it, but if you needed it, the Nightlight decaf is fabulous. Oh, this is three Africas. It's three different African beans. Oh, and you got to read the card. It says, this coffee is the definition of homemade, grown, processed, and even dry milled on the Urania family farm among the mango trees of Rivas, Costa Rica. Years of tinkering have brought its sweetness into focus with a tart complexity that should please its farmer, the ambitious Regulo Gerardo Urania, as much as it astonishes anyone with the good fortune to taste it. Rainier cherry, dried fig, creme brulee. I've got a Giant Steps. Actually, this is my favorite. I shouldn't admit to liking blends, but I love... I don't know what they have a coffee master who really knows what they're doing. Ugandan and Sumatran beans, ultra balanced, dense, chocolatey cup that stands up to cream quite well. That might be why, because I drink it with sinful, but it's delicious, heavy whipping cream. If coffee were any heavier bodied, you could pour it on pancakes. Viscous, fudgy, substantial. That's my bean. That's my brew. What's your brew? Go to bluebottlecoffee.com/twig, $10 off your first subscription order. And Stacy said it, what a great gift this would be for friends and family. Maybe a great gift for Thanksgiving. While you're there, check out their digital holiday store. Blue Bottle Coffee makes a great gift. That's actually a good idea to bring coffee for your Thanksgiving. bluebottlecoffee.com/, oh, that smells so good, /twig. Time for our picks of the week and our number of the week. Why don't you start us off, Stacey? You got anything fun for us? You already gave us a bunch of fun stuff with that weird pot.
Mm-hmm. A weird pot.
Yeah.
Stacey and her weird pot. Okay. if you go to my Twitter account.
Of course. I always do. Twitter.com/@GigaOhm. @GigaStacey.
Oh, where'd it go? Hold on. Oh, guys.
Did you take it down?
No. Okay.
Have you been
November
banned?
November 22nd. So no, there's I'll pop it in, copy, paste. My thing is a toy that I'm reviewing for my dog.
The Clever Pet?
Yes, you found it. Okay. So that is the Clever Pet.
That's a toy?
It is a $300 Wi-Fi powered game for your dog. And the goal is, see those things that light up?
Yeah.
It's like Simple Simon. So the goal is eventually your dog will be trained to touch those in order.
No, but if he does it right, he gets a treat.
Right.
Has your dog learned?
So my dog is still trying to figure out how the touch pads work.
Yeah, why does it open sometimes, Mom?
Yeah, if you turn the sound up, you'll hear her barking at it because she's just like,
what is this doing? Why are you doing this to me?
So
there you go.
That's my daughter whispering.
Yes.
And then
your daughter's going to help you don't cheat.
That noise goes on all day long.
Basically, it's a Skinner box for your house.
So, yes, that is the toy for your dog.
I wish it weren't so expensive, and I wish I had a dog. But other than that, great pick.
And cats would just say F you.
Oh, yeah. Although there are cat games. We have played the Little Friskies fishing game with the kitties, and they will paw that iPad trying to catch those fish forever. I have a video of it somewhere. I'll find it with the brilliant Google Photos search tool while Jeff Jarvis gives us his numbers of the week.
Well, I was going to do the new hashtag 2017 in four words, but then I looked up the most current entries and don't go there.
Oh, dear, of course, because they're filthy,
it's
right?
Ruined. Yeah. But my favorite was I can't get the four words, vote next time, basically.
Hashtag vote next time.
But it's done. So nine ways Twitter can punish you doing bad things.
Okay.
Right? So there's a list there. And what I wonder is, do they ever do this?
Well, they say that they can yank your blue check. I know that.
They can ensure your tweet reaches a smaller audience. They can block you from tweeting. They can hide your tweet from users in a specific country. They can, but if they can do all these things, how come we still have so much abuse on Twitter?
Yeah.
You know, I used to be of the mind that Twitter should be open and everything goes and it's an open network, but I'm now of the mind that they need to worry about the civility of what occurs there and their responsibility. And they got to figure out their own standards with that. I know that's not easy, but they let a lot of really bad crap go that's been reported. So,
is it not getting better?
I don't think so, but I don't know. Maybe I sound like right now, like all the despairing internet users who say the society is falling apart. But
I I'm not trying to invite people to yell at me on Twitter, but my Twitter stream is a really nice place.
Mine's been getting better. Now, maybe I've blocked, muted, and unfollowed the bad apples.
Yeah,
even somebody who was mean to me today was very nice. I had someone who told me that this is what did they tell me? It was they didn't like something I wrote, and they love our president Donald Trump, so they are unsubscribing to my newsletter.
Fair enough.
But and I said okay because you know. But even that is like the most negative thing that I think I've had, which I'm okay with.
You are a very fortunate.
What I
person.
See is people who report awful stuff and then show the response from Twitter saying this doesn't violate our standards.
Well, I do that's see
what,
that.
Right. That's now, I have seen people talking about what they've, you know, and I'm not denying that it's a bad place for other people and that it shouldn't be a bad place for people. I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I feel like I like Twitter.
My Twitter has been, you know, and sometimes it's terrible, but last few months it's been quite pleasant. I agree.
Oh, all right. Oh.
Yeah. And actually, to that point, I'm going to show you a little tool that I've been using a lot lately. You may notice I have a lot of news stuff in my tweets. I basically tweet out, you know, any of the news stories that we're thinking about. This is from Dave Weiner, the guy who, I love Dave. He invented blogging. He's kind of a curmudgeon. He also invented outlining with Think Tank. You may remember Think Tank going way
back when.
And was a proto-podcaster when Adam Curry, the podfather, came to him and said, you know, Dave, he invented RSS, Dave Weiner did. Dave, you ought to include binary enclosures in those RSS feeds, like maybe an audio file. Dave did and invented thereby the medium, which we are using right now. He has a lot of little tools on the web because he's a programmer and he just likes to write stuff. Most of them, I think, are written for himself. But I like Radio 3. I have a little bookmark in my bookmarklet in my toolbar and my browsers to radio3.io. And this is now how I tweet. So you can, and by the way, notice 280 characters. He's, of course, fixed it. You could put titles, links, enclosures. Your tweet will appear in this box. You can also have it cross-post, as I do, to Facebook as well as Twitter. You get as a result, you get a feed, so you can see my, in effect, a link blog. I mean, this was what blogs originally were, right? Just lists of links. And so this has automatically become a link blog. These are all the things I've posted at Radio 3. And what they are basically is mostly news stories. Very useful tool. I have an if this then that script that automatically takes what I post here, puts it on our pinboard, automatically imports our pinboard into a Google spreadsheet for our producer's use so he can build the rundowns. It's kind of a nice little workflow, and it's I get up in the morning and I just read through all the news sources, and I click Radio 3 whenever I want to save it. It does a very nice job. And
oh my gosh, Om, you got to tell Om, because this
Om would love this.
When we were at Giga Om, probably three times in the 8 years I was there, he tried to start basically stuff we're reading, just like a link blog.
Yeah, and he does that every weekend. He has weekend reads at Om.co, which I love. But yeah, yes. He should have a link blog. Oh my, wait a minute. Om.co, not .com. It scared me. I saw Om.com is for sale and I thought, oh no.
He went to .co because the .co guys.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if he still does it. I think he might not, but he used to do weekend reads, which I really liked.
He does it off and on. He's a venture capitalist now.
He's writing about you. He says,
"Oh yes, he does."
He says, "My new link blog." Back in the day, I used to publish the Daily Om. So now he's going to do what? Another link blog?
I don't know.
This was November 7th, so
yeah. And let's see what's there.
Om.blog. Let's see if he did it. Did he do it? Well, it looks just like Om.co.
Yeah. So this, you should tell him about this because Om reads.
He needs something easy.
Yes, he reads
a lot.
And
by the way, I think he's on WordPress. This also posts to WordPress.
Oh, yes, he is.
So it does. It will post to Twitter, Facebook, Slack, and a WordPress blog. So it really is the easiest way to do a link blog. And it supports, kind of these sophisticated things like the web links and all of that stuff that I don't really understand, but that what's-his-name is always talking about, Kevin Marks. Well, that is it. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It was so much fun, as always, to spend a couple of hours with you on a Wednesday. Stacey Higginbotham. You can catch more of Stacey. She does a great podcast, Stacey on IoT with Kevin Toefel, everybody's favorite master runner. And that comes out on Wednesdays, right?
Well, normally it comes out on Thursdays, but today we did it early.
Yeah. And they can find that at stacyoniot.com. Also, subscribe to her newsletter. You can see, not only is she smart, she does her homework, which is something I've never done. Did you do your homework when you were a kid in school?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Really?
Yeah. She does it now, though, right?
I do now because, if you're going to publish something on the internet, she probably should be right.
She hits the books. And at Giga Stacey on Twitter, a great place to follow her. Don't forget to follow Jeff Jarvis at his blog, buzzmachine.com. He writes frequently for other places like Medium and on Twitter at Jeff Jarvis. And, of course, don't forget he's a professor of journalism at the Fine Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY in New York. If you should know anyone who wants to become a professional.
I now have a chair.
You're a chair?
I'm a chair.
Who's
the
chair?
The Leonard Tao Professor of Journalistic Innovation.
What the what?
My wonderful benefactor, Leonard Tao. About a week ago.
The Leonard Tao Professor
of Journalistic Innovation.
The LTPOJI. The Lipitoji.
So I run the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism, and Leonard is a great entrepreneur and a great philanthropist, and he was nice enough to endow a chair. So I want to thank Leonard. And
that is an honor.
Now I can get rid of the standing desk.
He has a chair. He's the first person to sit in that chair, but not the last.
That's exactly how it works.
Thank you, Jeff. It's really nice to see you.
Congratulations, Jeff.
Yeah, congratulations. That's wonderful. Thank you all for being here. We do this week in whatever the heck we want to talk about. We call it This Week in Google, but you know. Every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. If you'd like to watch live, please join us in the chat room, too. You can watch live at twit.tv/live. Chat with us at irc.twit.tv. You could do it on the website, or if you have an IRC client, that's even better. But we welcome you no matter what. Very fine chat room, family-friendly, nicely moderated. It's even better than Stacey's Twitter feed. It's that good.
It's that clean and informational.
That good. Yes. Never any angry words spoken. If you can't watch live, you can always watch on demand. That's what we do here. We put all the shows we put out as audio and video on the website, twit.tv. In this case, twit.tv/twig. We also invite you to subscribe if you've got a podcast program you really like. Honor Dave Weiner. by using that RSS feed and subscribe and Stitcher and Slacker and Pocket Casts and iTunes and the Apple Podcast app and on and on and on. Just search for Twig and you will find it. We have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I will not be here next week. Who's doing Twig next week?
Me.
Besides you. Jason Howell will be hosting next week. And because I am headed off for my birth. My birthday's next Wednesday.
Oh.
Going to
happy
going,
birthday.
Going to New York. Thank you. To see a couple of Broadway shows. It's my dream birthday.
What you're seeing Hello, Dolly with Bette Midler.
Yes. And Meteor Shower, Steve Martin's new play with Amy Schumer.
Oh, I saw that.
And we're going to opening night.
Ooh. Yeah, that's so cool.
And we were invited to the after show party.
Wow. You are so cool.
Down in the, it's down in the Chelsea district, yeah.
Will Martin play the banjo?
I'm betting he will. It's kind of hard to get Steve not to play the banjo. He will play it at the drop of a hat. Sometimes he just says, would you like me to play the banjo? Yeah. But he's very good, so it's entertaining.
You know, if I could play the banjo, I would probably play the banjo all day long.
There is no happier instrument in God's green earth than the banjo. Yep. There are no sad banjo songs. Just happy. Thanks for being here. Have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll see you next week on Twig. Bye-bye.